Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Career changers, including veterans and active duty service members. Your transition starts here. Go from GI to IT in a matter of months. Become a certified cyber warrior with training at My Computer Career. Cybersecurity specialists are in high demand, offering IT pros great opportunities and a rewarding lifestyle while protecting our people, liberty, and treasured institutions from cyber threats. Deploy your career in IT today at mycomputercareer.edu/CWP, an elite CompTIA certification partner.
VA education benefits are available to those who qualify.
Joining us now is G. Edward Griffin, a real giant in the Liberty Movement. He's done so many monumental works. Of course, everybody knows Creature from Jekyll Island, but we wanted to also talk to him today about his book, A World Without Cancer, because I think that's a message that is people are ready to hear after what we've been through for the last 4 years. But we've now seen, I think, a convergence in medical, financial, and political, because it's all being swallowed up by the political stuff. Great to have G. Edward Griffin on. Thank you so much for joining us, sir.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
And I want to talk also about the Red Pill Expo that's going to be coming up in just a couple of weeks as well. So give you a chance to talk about that and what's happening with that. But your work is very well known by a lot of people, and we're going to try to get into maybe the medical aspect of this is maybe not as well known as the Federal Reserve, but we do want to talk about the financial stuff. That's very important right now. But I think it'd be good for us to talk about your biography. How did you get into doing documentaries and books, and especially in terms of going against the grain of conventional wisdom? Tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, it's a... It's a long background, of course, considering my age and all that. And it's probably not very interesting. It's rather boring, actually. Yeah, you're correct. We've covered some ground and made some amazing touch points along the way. But I think it's only because we've been at it for so long. Mm-hmm. My life has been pretty much normal in the sense, by normal, I'm almost afraid or embarrassed to say normal, because unfortunately what is normal out there in the world today is not particularly attractive.
An abnormal world, a normal person, yeah. An abnormal world.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not unusual, I guess I should say, in that I would start out in one direction and be confronted by some impossible barrier or setback or tragedy, and it would be life changing for me, and very, very uncomfortable, very painful, very, very frightening. And, but in retrospect, as the time goes by, I find out that that was the best thing that ever happened to me, because it forced me to do a right turn or change my direction substantially. And even though it was painful and I had to abandon my original plans and expectations, I found out that it was a better direction than the one I was on originally. And this, my life is full of that. And some of those tragedies along the way were very serious illnesses too. Mm. I was still very young. I was in my early 30s, and I had a wife and a couple of kids to support, and I had a collapse, and I had two doctors tell me I had multiple sclerosis. Mm. Now that was, I didn't really know for sure what that was. I knew it was bad, but when I looked it up in the encyclopedia, I decided, oh man, this is a bad way to go out the door. Mm. And I thought I was dying, of course, and but it was a misdiagnosis. I had exhausted myself. I had a rather, I thought I was carrying the world on my shoulders. I thought I had to save the world all by myself. And so I was not getting a lot of sleep. I was a young guy, of course. I was doing a lot of traveling, making presentations, training sessions, all that kind of thing. So I would go from one town to the next and drive a good portion of the day to get there and be taken out to dinner and then put on an evening presentation and then meet at somebody's house afterwards. And
what kind of presentations were you doing? Was this political?
Well, these were recruiting meetings.
Oh, okay.
At that time I was a coordinator for the John Birch Society.
Oh, okay.
Now, I know that scares a lot of people. They think that's a wacko organization. But
No, not me.
Well, good. Anyway, they're very calm and very not wacko at all. Of course, they have some wackos in there, but the percentage of wackos in the Birch Society, I thought, was smaller than the percentage outside of the Birch Society.
That's right. Yeah. They're going to be everywhere, yeah.
Yeah, that was the safest place to be. but anyway, that's what I was doing, and so I was drinking. Everybody would want to buy me some wine, and we'd drink wine and talk about life and the world events and so forth. And then I get to bed late at night or early in the morning, get up in the morning and drive and do that over and over again. I came back and I was planting some trees in my front yard, and I just froze up. I became paralyzed. And make a long story short, I was...
Hey, it's Ben Ferguson, and I want you to pause what you're doing for just 1 minute, and I want you to hear about love, generosity, and compassion. We say those words all the time, and they sound good. They feel good. But here's the truth. Those words don't mean anything unless they turn into action. And right now, not later today, not tomorrow, there's a child in the world who doesn't know if they'll eat, if they'll have a chance to learn, or if there's any hope at all. And while we're all busy, life keeps moving forward, but that child is waiting. This is where you come in. With Compassion International, you have the chance to change a child's future. Not just with words, not with promises, but with real help that provides food, education, and hope through local churches and people already in their community. Put your words into action and join me. Introduce a child to a loving Heavenly Father today at compassion.com. That's compassion.com.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
I had just exhausted my physical strength, malnutrition, toxic elements in my body, not enough sleep, and a bad mental attitude, always filled with anxiety and all the bad things. And I hadn't realized, I didn't think I had to worry about that because I was young, right? Young people don't get sick. So anyway, they diagnosed it as multiple sclerosis. It turned out not to be that. Once I got off of my routine and started to find out what this world was all about in terms of nutrition and rest and avoiding toxic things in your body and in your environment and so forth, I recovered rather rapidly. So in retrospect, it was very good because I learned how to live, and I probably wouldn't be alive today if I hadn't learned that lesson early in my life. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I was really pretty well stuck in bed, and I didn't know I could write. I had gone to school, and I'd learned about communications. I would stage plays. I was an actor, a little child actor. You can imagine anything worse than that. I did a lot
especially
of radio
today
shows.
I can imagine it being a lot worse today. It's
well, I don't know. It was pretty bad. I was right in the middle of that. And, you know, I was in Detroit, and we did radio in those days. And, you know, a lot of shows came out of Detroit, the Ford Theater and the Hermit's Cave. And we had a Saturday show. It was the same as Let's Pretend. And we covered. Anyway, I did a lot of radio stuff. So, and I went to school and took more of the same. Television was just coming on line in those days. So I was taking courses in television and radio communications.
Let me ask a question real quick. Your radio, I guess that was live radio performance.
Oh, yeah.
That's really interesting stuff. I love listening to the live things like that.
Yeah, it was. I worked my way through college as a radio announcer for WUOM, which was the university radio station at the University of Michigan. And you know, and with all of that, so I was into that. Mm-hmm. So when I got sick, I thought, well, I'm not going to be able to make a living. I couldn't get out of bed for the most part. Had to practically crawl from one room to the other. Mm. And so I got this call from a publisher, and he said, Ed, I understand you've been giving speeches on the United Nations, and they're very well received. Would you like to write a book for us on that topic? We want to publish a book, and we think you could do it. And of course, at that time, I had never written anything, and that was not I did not identify as an author. I identified as a communicator on television or radio or something like that. And my dream was to go to Hollywood and become a great Hollywood producer in motion pictures. Mm. So when this guy called me and said, how would you like to write a book? That was the last thing I felt I was capable or interested in doing. But I thought instantly about Hawaii. He's offering me some money, and here I am in bed. I can't do anything else to support my family, and we're running out of money. And so I found myself saying, oh, yeah, no problem. Yeah, sure, I could do that.
I've been in that kind of situation as well. You know, God puts us in a position where you got one way out, and that's it.
One way out.
Something that you would have chosen to do. Yeah.
So I just use that as an example. So I took on the commitment, and I started to do my hard research. I'd done a lot of it already, but I knew that in a book, you had to document everything. It wasn't just you could say, well, I know this and I know that. So I did research that lasted about probably 2 or 3 months of putting all the documents together. And then the day came when it was time to write. And it was kind of like looking at an old movie where everybody's seen those scenes where the author has to write something and he's on a typewriter and he types a few lines and he pulls the paper out, crushes it and throws it on the floor. And that's no good. And then this is no good. I went through that in spades.
All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy, right? Shiny.
To write something. So I was using a pencil. Mm-hmm. We didn't have computers in those days, and I couldn't type. So I was writing things out, and I'd tear it up and throw it out. I couldn't. How come? I can't write. I can't write. Give me a microphone. So then there's a point, an end to this. So finally I said, I'm just going to write Mary Had a Little Lamb. And I started to write things out, and the first thing you know, I had this idea. I can't write this because how do you approach a topic so huge as this was my book on the United Nations. My first book is called The Fearful Master, A Second Look at the United Nations. Mm-hmm. So I wrote down, how can you write about something like this? It's like a huge globe made of glass, so large that you couldn't grasp it in its entirety and you couldn't hold it. How do you write a book? It's like having to move a mountain. How do you move a mountain? And then I found myself writing, well.
Hey, it's Ben Ferguson, and I want you to pause what you're doing for just 1 minute, and I want you to hear about Alejandra. She lives in a remote community with very few resources and little to no health care. So when Alejandra gets sick, her parents have no real options, no doctors in their community, and no money for real medical care. By the third day, her body was shutting down. She woke up and just long enough to tell her mom, I can't take the pain anymore. I can't keep going. Her parents drove hours to find a doctor who tried everything, but she needed a private hospital. And that was impossible for her family to afford. And that is when Compassion International stepped in. Now, through Compassion, Alejandra was treated. And against all odds, she survived. She lived because someone, just like you, took action. Right now, unfortunately, there are children just like Alejandra who won't survive unless someone like you steps in. Compassion International partners with local churches, providing children with the support that they need. Critical medical care, plus food, education, and the hope of the gospel. All in Jesus' name. So help a child just like Alejandra today. You can visit compassion.com. That's compassion.com.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
You dig. and then this is my first spade. And I looked at it and I said, well, that's kind of clever. And the first thing you know, I extended that. And the next few pages came pretty fast. And by the time I got to page 7, it was roaring along. I looked at the wall and said, my gosh, I can write. And I'm having fun doing it. So I use that as an example. I wouldn't be here talking to you today if I hadn't had this illness mm-hmm. and that event that forced me to make a right turn in what I thought was my career path. And at that time, I didn't think I was going to live anyway. But so it forced me to make a change that affected my whole life, I hope, for the better.
Yeah, that's a great story. We've had so many people, when they lost, they were faced with the decision, take the shot or lose your job. And mm-hmm. I've talked to so many people who had that crisis. It's like, what do I do? I've trained all my life for this. I don't have any other alternative, but I'm not going to take that shot. And to a man, that has been, or a woman, that has been every person I've talked to about that. It's been a wonderful turning point for them. And so I think your life lesson, as well as a lot of other people, that's a real important life lesson, I think.
Well, it is. And that's why I said it's, in a way, I'm very normal, because what I just said, although it's dramatic, for me it was dramatic, everybody goes through those crises, I think. Maybe they don't think about it as having made a big change. And I suppose not every change in the direction is that dramatic, mm-hmm. but most of them, or many of them are, the important ones are. So with that as a background, I started off in one direction. All of a sudden, I'm writing, and I decided I wanted to go off on my own. I wanted to reach out to a lot of people, and I wanted to use my skills that I had acquired in communications. So I decided to produce some very low budget documentary films on important issues. And the first attempt was to write something on a documentary film on money and inflation. And then, of course, that led me obliquely to the topic of the Federal Reserve System. And I'm off and running now, and I had no idea how much voltage was in the wire that I was about to grab hold of on that one.
Yeah.
If I had even an inkling of how deep that topic goes, and how broad it is, how many things it covers, and how profoundly important it is to our lives, our liberty, our lifestyle, everything, I would never have tackled it, because it was far beyond my reach. I'm the last person in the world to write about things like that. I'm a kid that was a child actor, you know? And
well, that begs the question. How did you're working with before you started writing, and before you wrote that book on the UN, you were also lecturing about UN and other things like that. How did you get into working for the John Birch Society? Or how did you begin to be skeptical about what the UN's purposes and agenda were?
Well, that's another story similar to the one I just mentioned. I was working for a large corporation. I was in the corporate world. I had found out the hard way that Hollywood wasn't waiting for me to show up. I had gone there, and I was, you know, wanted to make my splash. I wanted to get a job with some production company, and I was looking for the grand opening, and it wasn't happening. And I looked around realistically, and I saw that all these young people there, the guys and gals, had talent superior to mine, really. And they were bussing tables and washing cars, waiting for the big chance in Hollywood. And then I began to get a sense of the corruption that is in Hollywood, mm-hmm. and the lifestyle, and all of the evil things that were there that I didn't like at all. And it became clear that if you didn't tolerate those things, or if you didn't participate in those things, your chances of getting that big break were pretty small. Mm-hmm. So I quit all that, and I went to work for a large insurance company, and I got a job in an underwriting department, you know, preparing group insurance plans for corporations and that kind of thing. So that's what I was doing when I decided to start speaking out on topics. And the reason I made that change is that I don't know who it was, but somebody handed me or sent me a little blue pamphlet called The Truth About the United Nations. I think that was the title. Hmm. I thought, United Nations? Well, I...
Hey, it's Ben Ferguson, and I want you to pause what you're doing for just 1 minute, and I want you to hear about Alejandra. She lives in a remote community with very few resources and little to no health care. So when Alejandra gets sick, her parents have no real options, no doctors in their community, and no money for real medical care. By the third day, her body was shutting down. She woke up and just long enough to tell her mom, I can't take the pain anymore. I can't keep going. Her parents drove hours to find a doctor who tried everything, but she needed a private hospital, and that was impossible for her family to afford. And that is when Compassion International stepped in. Now, through Compassion, Alejandra was treated, and against all odds, she survived. She lived because someone, just like you, took action. Right now, unfortunately, there are children just like Alejandra who won't survive unless someone like you steps in. Compassion International partners with local churches, providing children with the support that they need, critical medical care, plus food, education, and the hope of the gospel, all in Jesus' name. So help a child just like Alejandra today. You can visit compassion.com. That's compassion.com.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Gone to school. I've been to the university. I knew all about the United Nations. Why? It was wonderful. It was our last best hope for peace, they told me. And I thought it was true. And so I was very much in favor of the UN and as a means of avoiding war.
And about what year was that?
That was 1960.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Maybe 1959. Probably that pamphlet was in 1959. Anyway, so I read the pamphlet, and I was incensed by it. I thought, well, this is ridiculous. I know better. But it sort of, the things it said were hard for me to believe, that these people were lying. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's how naive, you know, you come out of school, how naive can you be to think that your teachers would be lying, or the people who would write books might even be lying?
It's hard for us to believe that about other people. We want to believe the best of them, and we want to think that they're like us, you know, and so we always overestimate their morals, and we underestimate their technology, don't we?
We certainly do, yeah. And of course, we're trained to do that. I went to the public school system, and that was, mm-hmm. I found out later, one of its primary objectives is to create that attitude in the minds of the students. So they had succeeded, and I found it, I was very highly indignant over this pamphlet, written by a college professor, no less. You'd expect he would know better, right? So anyway, one day I went down to the library in downtown Los Angeles. It was only a few blocks from where our corporate office was, and I had some time in my hands that day, so I decided to just drop into the library. I never thought I'd go into a library again after I got out of school, because I thought that was where you punish people for doing bad things. But anyway, I went into the international department. I wanted to check out a few books on the topic of the United Nations, and in particular these wars, these peacekeeping operations, as they called them, and to see if I could learn more about it and prove that this college professor had it, you know, was wrong. So I checked out a few books, and even though they were all written from the friendly perspective, they were all friends of the UN. Many of them were either employees or former employees, or they had positions, professional positions, which depended on their being friendly. Mm-hmm. Some of them were academics, and academics, I discovered, would never dare go against the UN. Anyway, so I read those books, and I recognized that they were biased. And so that was the beginning of it, reading their own works. And some of them were quite frank, by the way. I learned about the war in Katanga with Patrice Lumumba and all the war on Katanga in Africa was really an eye-opener for me. In fact, that's how I opened my book on the United Nations. It was with that section on what happened in Katanga. Basically, what happened is that there was a communist revolution in the Congo, with Katanga province of the Congo, and the so-called colonial powers just left. There was betrayal, I think, at the highest levels in the government. I think it was Belgium, and they just withdrew their troops and all their law enforcement facilities and just gave the Congo over to the communist revolutionaries. And that was hard to believe, but there it was in evidence. And so when the troops went out, there was mass slaughter going on. And it looked like it might be racial, but it was not. It was economic. It was getting the colonialists out. That was the word they used. And the capitalists, get the capitalists out and get the socialists in power again. So Congo went into total chaos, blood all over the place, and production stopped. The economy crashed. People were starving. People were robbing each other. It was total chaos. I fear we're in America going to get somewhat like see some of that ourselves when we make that step toward total collectivism or socialism. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's what happened. And so the UN came along and said, well, look at this chaos. We've got to put an end to that. And everybody said, yes, yes, that's what you're for. And you're the peacekeepers, right? Yes. Okay. Well, the peacekeepers went in and there were multiple provinces in the Congo. And they were all in total blood-drenched chaos, except one. The one shining exception was Katanga. Mm. It was headed by Moise Tshombe. And Moise Tshombe had been to some universities in London and had come to America, and he understood the principles of free enterprise capitalism. And he was standing firm, and his province was like it had always been. And chaos was all around them. So where did the UN send the peacekeepers?
There.
It didn't send them anyplace else where the chaos was. They sent them where the chaos was not. And they literally overthrew the Katanga province and put it into chaos also. Wow. And when I saw that documented so clearly, and in many cases by the employees and officers of the UN itself,
hey, it's Ben Ferguson, and I want you to pause what you're doing for just 1 minute, and I want you to hear about Alejandra. She lives in a remote community with very few resources and little to no health care. So when Alejandra gets sick, her parents have no real options, no doctors in their community, and no money for real medical care. By the third day, her body was shutting down. She woke up and just long enough to tell her mom, I can't take the pain anymore. I can't keep going. Her parents drove hours to find a doctor who tried everything, but she needed a private hospital, and that was impossible for her family to afford. And that is when Compassion International stepped in. Now, through Compassion, Alejandra was treated, and against all odds, she survived. She lived because someone, just like you, took action. Right now, unfortunately, there are children just like Alejandra who won't survive unless someone like you steps in. Compassion International partners with local churches, providing children with the support that they need, critical medical care, plus food, education, and the hope of the gospel, all in Jesus' name. So help a child just like Alejandra today. You can visit compassion.com. That's compassion.com.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps.
In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic.
Keep your eyes on the road.
Hop on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly.
Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Where they bragged about doing that in their own words. And when I saw that, that changed my life, because it was a red pill, you might say, that I saw life the way it really was. And in one book by I think it was an Irish general from Ireland, I can't think of his name anyway, but a big thick book on how wonderful he was in the Congo doing all these things on behalf of international cooperation and peace and so forth. And he time and again said, well, you know, when this issue came up, we lied in the press conferences, as all bureaucrats do. And he was sort of like, well, that's the way it is, folks. I'm glad you're reading my book. Now you know how it works. So Connor O'Brien, that was his name, General O'Brien. And I realized that these people actually boast about some of the crimes they commit. Mm-hmm. And that was my changing point. Right there.
Wow.
And so my first interest was the United Nations, and I did some research on it. I took that pamphlet that I talked about a moment ago, and then my own independent research and added to it, and that's what became the basis for my book, The Fearful Master.
That's great. Yeah, wonderful title as well. You talked about
that comes from a quotation attributed to George Washington.
Mm-hmm.
I could never find an official source for it, but everybody seemed to agree that it came from him. And he said, government is not, let's see if I can get this straight. Government is not wisdom. It is not benevolence. It is force. Like fire, it is a dangerous servant and a fearful master.
That's great. Yeah, whoever wrote that, if Washington
they had it,
right,
they had it.
Yeah, they nailed it. So it's absolutely true. Now, you were with the John Birch Society. You were talking about how they like to portray Birchers as crazy. And I guess a big part of that, I think a big part of that war against the John Birch Society was coming from William F. Buckley. Talk a little bit about that. All right. Was he the point man publicly, or was there, you know, other things that were happening?
No, I don't think Buckley was a point man at all. Yeah. That's an interesting observation. Buckley did come out publicly against the Birch Society, and the militant left-wingers attacked the Birch Society vehemently. They called it, you know, fascist, Nazis, extremists, anti-Semites, wackos, you know, any of those things. And they just kept repeating it and repeating it. And a lot of people believed it because they read about it in their newspaper. And, of course, it was none of those things, but that didn't make any difference. Perception is the important thing.
Yes.
And but Buckley was not from the radical left. There were a few people like Buckley that also jumped on the bandwagon from what people considered to be the right wing. Of course, we could talk about the impropriety of thinking there's a difference between right and left later.
Yeah.
But I learned that the hard way, too, that the right wing and the left wing are merely two wings on the same ugly bird called collectivism.
That's right.
But anyway, I hadn't learned that yet. So anyway, Buckley was one of those guys who was, you know, associated with the so-called right wing, but they believed pretty much the same thing, and they would attack any serious challenge to collectivism, which is what they believed in.
Yeah, his big establishment. I remember I was thinking that I was trying to get polar opposites. So I'd read National Review and I'd read The Nation when I was in college. I'd read these and kind of try to figure out what's going on. I didn't want to read Time and Newsweek, so I wanted to get these opposing views and everything. But then I eventually found out they were also very much alike in many ways. Yeah. You point out. I thought it was extreme, but I wasn't, you know. So
yeah, what's the supposing business?
Yeah.
Yeah, funny. People have to learn that lesson yet. They still think, especially as we're living right now through a period of great political intensity, They really think that the political parties are going to be their salvation.
Yes.
It's just a question, who are you going to vote for?
That's right. You know? And it is the most important election of our lifetime. You've had a lot of those most important elections of your lifetime, haven't you? You've probably heard that more than
every one of them is the most important. Right. Last chance to do this right.
And, it's going to be the end of the world if we don't get this right. Yeah.
Yeah,
uh-huh. We've heard that so many times. Well, so you start out with the UN and you're working with JBS. And how did you get over to the Federal Reserve? How did you move over to that?
I decided I had to produce some little documentaries or documentary films, as we call them today. But back in those days, unless you had big bucks, which we didn't, you used film strips, film strip projectors. And it was a projector where you roll a little roll of 35 millimeter film. It's just still pictures on them. One, you know, I think we had 98 pictures or so. And you click them one at a time, and it projects up on the screen. You play the soundtrack on like an LP recording on a phonograph machine. And when it's time to change the picture, there's a beep that comes onto the sound. The operator turns the picture, and the narration continues. And then it's like a PowerPoint presentation with the beeps.
Mm-hmm.
And, so that's what we did in those days, and I did, I don't know, 9 or 10 of them. And I decided I wanted to do one on...
Hey, it's Ben Ferguson, and I want you to pause what you're doing for just 1 minute, and I want you to hear about Alejandra. She lives in a remote community with very few resources and little to no health care. So when Alejandra gets sick, her parents have no real options, no doctors in their community, and no money for real medical care. By the third day, her body was shutting down. She woke up and just long enough to tell her mom, I can't take the pain anymore. I can't keep going. Her parents drove hours to find a doctor who tried everything, but she needed a private hospital, and that was impossible for her family to afford. And that is when Compassion International stepped in. Now, through Compassion, Alejandra was treated. And against all odds, she survived. She lived because someone, just like you, took action. Right now, unfortunately, there are children just like Alejandra who won't survive unless someone like you steps in. Compassion International partners with local churches, providing children with the support that they need. Critical medical care, plus food, education, and the hope of the gospel. All in Jesus' name. So help a child just like Alejandra today. You can visit compassion.com. That's compassion.com.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
On inflation. The money supply. I didn't know much about it, but I knew that there was something fishy going on because everybody was accusing the other guy of being responsible for inflation. You know, everybody accused the farmers. They were getting too much for their food. And the farmers said, no, we're starving. We have to eat our own food to just stay alive. We don't make any money. It's the distributors that take all the money. And the distributors, not us, it's the truckers. And the truckers, oh, no, it's not us, it's the grocery stores. And the grocers, oh, it's not us, it's the labor unions, and so forth. And they're all, you know, everybody's pointing to somebody else as the cause. And they were all correct in a sense that it was not them, but they didn't know who it was. And there was that hidden element that nobody had looked at. And so I was curious about that. So I started to do research on inflation. And, of course, that leads directly to the engine of inflation, and that's the Federal Reserve System, because that's the power that creates money out of debt, and they can just create as much money as people are willing to borrow into existence, and it's not their money; they just create it out of nothing, or worse than nothing, out of debt.
Mm-hmm.
So the money supply expands much faster than goods and services expand, and therefore the relative prices for those goods and services in terms of the expanded source of the money goes up. It's just a very simple formula. A high school kid that knows anything about math can figure it out. But the American people still don't understand it, mm-hmm. pretty much, because it's deliberately compounded and made to look very complicated. It's not. Anyway, so I got into that, and I created a couple of banker boxes full of research on it, and I was ready to go. But then I realized, hey, this topic is getting too big for me. And meanwhile, I had to get on and produce some faster film strips because I have to put groceries on the table, right? So I put the Kemp banker boxes in my closet for now. And then one day I got a call from a little old lady in tennis shoes from Pasadena. You've heard about those ladies. This was a real one. And she was a widow, and she obviously had some money because she lived in a big house in Pasadena. And her husband had passed away, of course, and had this car in the garage. It was probably about 12, 15 years old, but I think it had like 800 miles on it. That's a brand new car. Well, that's a little side story. But she was a wonderful lady, and she had a monthly class that she was, or meeting in her home, on taxes. And she'd heard that I was giving speeches and showing film strips and so forth. So she called me and asked me if I would give a speech to her group on the weekend on taxes. And I said, well, I don't know much about taxes, except that they're too high and I'm against them. What else can you say? The taxes are, but I might be able to talk to your group about a hidden tax. Would that be of interest to you? And she said, a hidden tax? What is that? And in my supreme wisdom, I said, well, I guess you're just going to have to retain my services so I can tell you what it was. And she laughed. She said, you got me. She said, let's do it. So, all right, I committed to do a presentation on the Federal Reserve as the hidden tax. And that forced me to open up my banker boxes and go through this stuff again. And the second time through, I was amazed at what I picked up that I didn't catch the first time through. Hmm. And I became electrified by how really important this was, how many areas in our lives it reached that I hadn't really focused on. So I got excited about it, and I spent some time putting together an outline. I gave the presentation, and it was very well received. I was happy to see. And some people approached me afterwards there, and they said, Ed, that was good. You ought to put that on the road. Well, you don't do that to a child actor. You say, oh, I'll put it on the road, which I did. I ramped it, got it all well organized, and I called it a crash course on money. It was a one-day seminar. I thought, you know, I could probably sell tickets to this if I was smart enough. And so I tried that, and by golly, it worked. And I was selling tickets and traveled. I put it on the road. I was going from town to town to town. This time I'm not doing what I did in the old days. I was taking care of myself. And so we did that crash course on money.
Hey, it's Ben Ferguson, and I want you to pause what you're doing for just 1 minute, and I want you to hear about love, generosity, and compassion. We say those words all the time, and they sound good. They feel good. But here's the truth. Those words don't mean anything unless they turn into action. And right now, not later today, not tomorrow, there's a child in the world who doesn't know if they'll eat, if they'll have a chance to learn, or if there's any hope at all. And while we're all busy, life keeps moving forward. But that child is waiting. This is where you come in. With Compassion International, you have the chance to change a child's future. Not just with words, not with promises, but with real help that provides food, education, and hope through local churches and people already in their community. Put your words into action and join me. Introduce a child to a loving Heavenly Father today at compassion.com. That's compassion.com.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino.
download the Moto Casino app today.
And then I'm probably giving you more information than you want.
No.
But this is what happened. At the end of, I think it was probably about the 9th or 10th seminar, at the end of the meeting, I was approached by another little old lady, and she said, Mr. Griffin, and that was always a shock to me, because here she's an elderly lady, and I'm still in my 20s, late 20s or early 30s, and in my 30s, I guess. She's calling me Mr. Griffin. I've always got a kick out of that. She said, after what I've learned from you today, she said, I'm really concerned about what I should do with what limited resources I have. My husband passed away, and he left a small stipend in insurance, and we can get along. We have a small investment in a small apartment building, or two apartments, I think she said. But we're in debt. Should I get out of debt? Should I take what we have in assets and put it in gold and silver? Or should I, what should I do with my assets? And it hit me at that moment what a fraud I was, because I did not know the answer to that question. I knew what the Federal Reserve was doing. I knew how they created money out of debt. I knew the impact it had on the purchasing power of money. I knew all those things, a lot of them, not all, but I was learning still in those days. But to answer the question of what she should do to avoid the consequences of that, I had no idea. Mm-hmm. I was a fraud. And she was expecting me to know. And so I stopped doing the webinar, the seminars, I should say. And I enrolled in the College for Financial Planning, which was a course done by a Chicago outfit. It was an educational group. It was like a CFP designation. Mm-hmm. And it normally takes a couple of years to get it. So I enrolled in it. It was all by correspondence. And then you have to go to a physical location and take the exam. That's an all-day exam and so forth. So I did that, and I got my CFP designation as a financial advisor. Mm-hmm. Not because I wanted to do that. I just wanted to know how to answer this woman's question. How do you protect your assets and under these conditions? So that's what I did. And then I came out of that with another realization, which I never would have had I not been taking that course. And that is that these people were teaching bunk. I was learning bunk. Now, they were teaching how to invest in markets that is in the best interest of the financial planners, not in the best interest of the investors.
Yeah.
And that was really what it was all about. And of course, they always said it was for the group, for the best investment, I'll get this straight yet. It's always best for the investor himself, but it was always an investment that paid a commission to the person that recommended it or something.
Mm-hmm,
like that.
Mm-hmm.
And none of it really took into account that the value of the money was constantly being depreciated.
Yes.
They didn't really understand inflation. Or they said, well, this has a better interest rate and therefore better to fight inflation. But they never talked about inflation itself and what the long-term consequences might be over 20 or 30 years, where you would do everything they recommend, but still in 20 or 30 years you have zero because the dollar is zero, you know, and things like that. So that's when I decided, hey, somebody ought to write a book on this. And I looked around, and there were books on the topic, but they were all kind of written from the point of view of somebody who wanted to go into banking. If they wanted to be a banker, the book was there on the Federal Reserve, how to use the Federal Reserve, how it works, and the terminology, and it was all good. But the books didn't help the average person at all understand the fraud that was built into the banking system.
And not even the bankers. I had a friend of ours, and I would make remarks from time to time about the Federal Reserve, and we got together, and he had his brother, who was a branch manager at a bank, and he says, whatever his name was, I don't know, it was Fred or something. I met him once, and that was it. But he said, Fred, you know, Dave's got a lot of issues with Federal Reserve. He said, tell him about the Federal Reserve. He goes, they just cash checks. They just process checks. That's your understanding of this. So,
yeah.
It's
Yeah.
That was one of the most clueless people I've ever seen in terms of fantasy. I mean, he wasn't even aware of the impact of, setting interest rates even, for example.
No,
you know,
no.
None of it.
Well, you see, you don't have to understand that to make a killing in the banking.
That's right.
All you have to do is just know how to cash checks and move the money around.
That's right.
And collect interest.
That's right. Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Hey, it's Ben Ferguson, and I want you to pause what you're doing for just 1 minute, and I want you to hear about Alejandra. She lives in a remote community with very few resources and little to no health care. So when Alejandra gets sick, her parents have no real options, no doctors in their community, and no money for real medical care. By the third day, her body was shutting down. She woke up and just long enough to tell her mom, I can't take the pain anymore. I can't keep going. Her parents drove hours to find a doctor who tried everything, but she needed a private hospital, and that was impossible for her family to afford. And that is when Compassion International stepped in. Now, through Compassion, Alejandra was treated, and against all odds, she survived. She lived because someone, just like you, took action. Right now, unfortunately, there are children just like Alejandra who won't survive unless someone like you steps in. Compassion International partners with local churches, providing children with the support that they need, critical medical care, plus food, education, and the hope of the gospel, all in Jesus' name. So help a child just like Alejandra today. You can visit compassion.com. That's compassion.com.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps.
In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly.
Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.
So that's how it all started. And so, as I said earlier, it's kind of a boring story, actually, because it's the same thing over and over again, that you'd stumble into things that you had no idea where you're headed.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had had any sense, literally, any common sense, knowing what I know now, I would never have tackled it, because it was so much over my understanding, over my head. I didn't know any of this. Well, it's a good thing I didn't know, because I've talked to bankers since then, and especially when we get into the topic of cancer and things like that. I have no medical background yet. I'm writing a book on cancer therapy and so forth. Mm-hmm. And I've had people tell me, like doctors in particular, say, Ed, you had an advantage that we didn't have. I said, what? What do you mean an advantage? How could that be? You went to school. That's the advantage, they said. We had to unlearn.
Yes.
Well, all you had to do was learn. We had to unlearn first.
That's true. I thought,
oh, yeah. Because when you go through the institutions and they teach you these things, you believe. You become a true believer.
Oh, yeah.
Trust
yeah.
these people.
Yeah, before we leave the financial stuff, I mean, you know, we got a lot of people looking at what is happening now. It looks like, you know, they've been kicking this can down the road for a long time. Looks like we're getting towards the end of the rope. They've openly talked about how they want to re-engineer the entire financial system. CBDC is on the horizon and all the rest of this stuff. You know, what in general is your advice to people? I know you're not a financial advisor and you're not giving financial advice, but just in general, in terms of preparing for what is coming, what would you say to people?
I guess it depends on to whom I'm talking, because for many people, if you tell them really what's happening, it's so beyond their world of understanding that they cannot believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they believe it, they don't understand it. And so you're wasting your time. You have to get, depending on who you're talking to. But I guess the simplest way to explain it is to be totally honest, but to not be dramatic about it. So let's see if I can put that together.
It's some pretty dramatic stuff queued up in the thing. Yeah,
not being too dramatic. Mm-hmm. What is happening, in my view, David, is that the old system of money is coming to an end. And that's an important fact to know, because up until now, all you had to know is, well, what has always worked? You know, like, should we invest in gold or silver or something, in coins? And there could be arguments pro and con, but the most overriding argument was, it's always worked, no matter when you look in history, no matter what the problem was, those that had gold and silver always came out on top. Mm-hmm. So it's always worked that way is a really powerful item. But now it isn't, in my view, because the system itself is changing, where to the point where money will no longer even exist in the way that we think of it. Money, the essence of money, in order for it to have any use to us, is that we have to own it. Mm-hmm. It's got to be our money. It's not somebody else's money. Because if it's somebody else's money, they can just take it back. Mm-hmm. And well, we don't have it. And this is what's changing, is the fact that, and most people don't see this at all, that they think, well, no matter what they come up with, it'll be just like it always has been. No, because this CBCDs, the central bank digital currencies that all of the nations now are committed to adopting in the very near future, in the next decade for sure, possibly starting in the next year or two, that quality of private ownership is gone. That those tokens or whatever they call them, the digital currencies, they'll have different names, whatever the name is, they will be owned by the banks, and they'll be allocated to you and me and everybody else to use as long as we have a good social credit, mm-hmm. which means as long as we behave according to what they think we should.
You and I are going to be pretty poor, aren't we?
We're going to be out on the street, sitting on the curb with a tin cup, asking somebody to put a coin into the tin cup, but there'll be no coins. There are no coins anymore. They're just digital.
Hey, it's Ben Ferguson, and I want you to pause what you're doing for just 1 minute, and I want you to hear about love, generosity, and compassion. We say those words all the time, and they sound good. They feel good. But here's the truth. Those words don't mean anything unless they turn into action. And right now, not later today, not tomorrow, there's a child in the world who doesn't know if they'll eat, if they'll have a chance to learn, or if there's any hope at all. And while we're all busy, life keeps moving forward, but that child is waiting. This is where you come in. With Compassion International, you have the chance to change a child's future. Not just with words, not with promises, but with real help that provides food, education, and hope through local churches and people already in their community. Put your words into action and join me. Introduce a child to a loving Heavenly Father today at compassion.com. That's compassion.com.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Mm-hmm. Impulses in a computer. So forget the cup. And people can't understand that we're actually approaching a change in the entire system. So the rules of what you do are different now. Mm-hmm. I would say normally, without this upcoming CBCDs, that we should have a nice stockpile in gold and silver. And I still say that, by the way. Mm-hmm. And I have not as nice a stockpile as I would like, but I have some shekels put away in gold and silver and in food and in other physical tangibles, mm-hmm. other assets that people will need and you can use as barter. But in terms of how you come out of it okay and still maintain your lifestyle, it's a different game. Mm-hmm. And the chances are we're not going to come out of it at anywhere close to how we went into it. And we have to be prepared for that reality. Nobody wants to hear that.
Yes. And I think what we're going to get is a heavy dose of reality. You know, it's going to be skills and it's going to be commodities and things like that that are going to be negotiable. And, you know, it's going to be it is going to be a reset. And then the question is, how do we cope with that? I think, you know, in terms of people talking about a parallel society, Americans have not really had any experience like people in third world countries have in terms of operating black markets and things like that. But I guess we'll learn pretty quickly.
Yes.
Necessity.
Well, yes. Well, even the black market has a problem with it, because in order for a black market to work, you have to have money that you own.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You go into the black market and you have money that you can give to somebody who's going to give you something. Or barter is the only thing that's left.
Yeah.
And that only works in your local community among people you know and trust. So it doesn't allow you to put gas in your car.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't allow you to pay your rent or to buy clothes in the big store, the big box stores or anything like that. If we don't turn this around and prevent it, we're going to be very much like little children.
Yes.
Who are completely dependent on the state for everything. And that includes food, shelter, health care, clothing, everything. And under those conditions, most people will buckle. Mm-hmm. And they'll be like slaves in Egypt.
Mm-hmm. That's right. The thing that concerns me is that this is all based on surveillance. That is their overriding desire to know everything about us. And what concerns me about it is how apathetic so many people in our society are about privacy and about surveillance and about mm-hmm. free speech. And you got people on, you know, across the political spectrum, all these people that are so eager about the election. And you see both of these candidates talking about how they got to shut people down that disagree with them. But, and because of that, people downstream from them are also buying into this kind of censorship stuff. And I think if we could develop and get back a respect for free speech and for privacy and things like that, that really has to be fundamental, as a guard against some of this stuff, because that really is the essence of how their controls are going to run out against us. What do you think?
Well, you're absolutely correct. And, in other words, we have to be dealing with ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And ideas, that's the basis of our war. This is a war of ideas. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, they have these powerful weapons that frighten us and can be used to eliminate us, and that's the ultimate weapon, of course. But in the meantime, they're conquering us not with weapons. They're conquering us with fear of weapons.
That's right.
And that fear of weapons makes us very compliant. And, of course, if they didn't have the weapons, we wouldn't be afraid of them. That is true. But they could pretend like they have the weapons, and that's often what has happened in the past, as you probably know. In Russia, particularly in the Soviet Union, they would parade these huge missiles in the street on trucks. You know, they were like 80 feet long, and these huge missiles like we send to the moon,
mm-hmm.
or supposedly send to the
supposedly.
Moon.
Supposedly. That's right.
I don't know what to think about that one. But those weren't really missiles at all, I'm told, that they were just, you know, made of wood and painted up and so forth. But Americans, oh, look, they got missiles, too. And it was the fear of missiles, not the missiles themselves, that caused us to not confront the Soviet Union and try and make friends with them and mm-hmm. and abandon our own interests and so forth.
It's kind of a Potemkin parade, right?
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, this is new, and I guess that's my message, that the old answers to that question not reliable anymore.
That's right.
But that still doesn't mean you shouldn't give them up. I mean, you shouldn't use them, I should say, because I think that...
Hey, it's Ben Ferguson, and I want to be honest with you for a second about how an act of compassion really feels. A couple of years ago, I made the choice to partner with an amazing organization called Compassion International. Why? Because I wanted to sponsor a child in need. It was a nice idea, sure. But I had no idea just how much that simple act would change my life as well. I sponsored Nadia and got to watch her life change right in front of my eyes, going from starving literally alone on the streets to getting the healthcare and education she needs to reach her God-given full potential. I got to be a part of that change, and the light of that compassion not only illuminates in her, it illuminates now in me. That is the power of compassion. The light of Christ shines on all of us. Feel it for yourself and change literally a child's life. Change the world, and you also change yourself. You can sponsor a child today. Visit compassion.com. That's compassion.com.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spend it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Even though we don't have money because we're not obedient enough and they cut us down, and we did have coins, we could probably find somebody who would take silver coins if they're small denomination, mm-hmm. and gold coins in return for food or something that they have a little surplus on in their homes. But this is not living. This is not surviving. This is slavery.
And I think, though, if we fall back on the fact that what's going to get us through this one way or the other is going to be the ideas. It's going to be the principles on which we base our life. I think people who have a relationship with Christ are going to have a foundation that's going to carry them through this stuff. And it's going to be very difficult if you don't have something like that. You are going to, if you don't have any, the sand is going to be shifting. The earth is going to be quaking. And if there isn't some foundation that is rock solid in your life, and if they've got you afraid, they've got you. And that's what we saw 4 years ago. That was, you know, really panic and fear. But that brings me to the medical stuff, because I don't want to finish the interview without having you talk about the book World Without Cancer. I think this is really a time for people's eyes to be open to this, because prior to what happened in 2020, a lot of people were taken in by the white coats. I remember when they first started this thing, you had a public health person come out. I played that clip over and over again. Comes out to the podium, but before the person who's going to speak comes out of the podium, they had six people come out, three on each side, all of them in white coats. And they march out in a line, and three of them stand on one side of the podium, and three of them stand. I said, look at this. They're just putting this in your face. Like, we got white lab coats. We're medical, and we have authority. So listen to us. And I think people have seen that now as a fraud, and they have seen the self-interest in all of this stuff. So they're open to questioning the authorities on this. And I'm sure, you know, you must have quite a story behind A World Without Cancer, because I know they came after Laetril and B17, amygdalin, and all that in a very, very heavy way. I didn't realize that you had written this book until I interviewed John Richardson at rncstore.com. When he was talking about the books that they have there, and about your book especially, that's one of the main reasons I wanted to get you on, because this is so key, and it is a time that people are ripe to hear this message. Tell us a little bit about that, how you got into it.
Well, there you go again. How did I get into it? Well, John Richardson Sr., Dr. Richardson, and I were very close friends. In fact, we had both worked together on projects in the Birch Society, and he put up some money to open up a little bookstore in the San Francisco area, and that's where I got involved, because I was with the Birch Society in those days. But we soon developed a personal friendship that went well beyond that, and it got to the point, well, after a while, we want to get away from the routine, the regular routine of our daily lives, and we'd like to get away from town, go out in the countryside, and tell people we're going fishing or something like that. But we just go out and talk and mm-hmm. do some hiking in the hills. And one day we're out doing that, and Dr. John says to me, Ed, I need your help. I need your... He took his briefcase with him on that trip, I thought was strange. And he opened up his briefcase and pulled out some papers and fumbled through them. He said, I'm trying to write an article for the local newspaper or magazine, and I need your help writing. Could you help me? I said, well, sure, of course. That's what I do. You're the doctor. If I get sick, you help me. I'm the writer. And if you're silly enough to ask me, I'll help you with the writing. So he said, well, I asked him, I said, what is it? He said, well, I'm in trouble with the local medical association. They're threatening to take away my license. I said, what did you do? You know, like the typical, what did you do wrong?
Yeah.
And he said, well, what I'm doing wrong is I'm saving lives. Mm-hmm. Oh, this was
news. And now we've seen that story over and over again. People are ready to hear this and understand what's behind it.
Yeah. I said, what do you mean? So naturally he told me the story. He said, I'm an eye, ear, nose, and throat specialist, as you know, but I've been getting people with cancer and throughout their body, systemic, and they want me to treat them because they hear that I've got something that works. And I said, well, do you? He says, yeah, I do. well, tell me about it. So that's how the whole thing started. He said, well, I found out there's a substance that's found in nature that I didn't believe in at first, but my office manager convinced me to look into it. So I did. This is a substance that occurs in nature. And
hey, it's Ben Ferguson, and I want you to pause what you're doing for just 1 minute, and I want you to hear about Alejandra. She lives in a remote community with very few resources and little to no health care. So when Alejandra gets sick, her parents have no real options, no doctors in their community, and no money for real medical care. By the third day, her body was shutting down. She woke up and just long enough to tell her mom, I can't take the pain anymore. I can't keep going. Her parents drove hours to find a doctor who tried everything, but she needed a private hospital, and that was impossible for her family to afford. And that is when Compassion International stepped in. Now, through Compassion, Alejandra was treated, and against all odds, she survived. She lived because someone, just like you, took action. Right now, unfortunately, there are children just like Alejandra who won't survive unless someone like you steps in. Compassion International partners with local churches, providing children with the support that they need, critical medical care, plus food, education, and the hope of the gospel, all in Jesus' name. So help a child just like Alejandra today. You can visit compassion.com. That's compassion.com.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
If you eat it, it turns out to be a natural control or prevention, a natural resistance against cancer. I said, how can that be? He said, well, I'm not sure how it can be, but I know that it works. So he's told me the story of this amygdalin, or laetril is the more popular name for it, that's found in some 1,200 edible plants, actually. But anyway, it's primarily found for commercial purposes in apricot seeds and peach seeds and any fruit in the rosacea family has this stuff called amygdalin in it. It's bitter to the taste, and that's why most people in the Western world or in affluent societies don't like to eat foods that have this substance in it because it's bitter. Mm-hmm. If you've ever bitten into an apple seed, you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. That's the flavor. And he said that stuff in low quantities it looks like it's a natural control for cancer. And he told me the story. All right. This gets interesting in the details. He had a dog that had cancer, and he was about to put the dog down because, you know, he tried chemotherapy and everything else on the dog that the doctors do, and it wasn't working. In fact, the dog was getting sicker. And when he heard about it, he says, I decided to use this substance on the dog. And he said, blow me down. The dog got well real fast. Because I couldn't believe it. I'd never seen that happen before. And then the next part of the story is that he said his nurse came to him, his head nurse, whose husband had terminal cancer. And she said, Dr. John, you know, my husband is not going to last very much longer. And I saw what happened to the dog. Would you please do that for my husband?
Oh, yeah.
And he said, well, sure, I'd be glad to, but don't tell anybody because it's not approved, you know, and for human use. And he tried it on her husband, and he got well. This is how it all started. And so John said, I started using it very, very cautiously and very low dosages and very suspiciously, making sure that I was not risking anybody's life, using it only on people who really had terminal cancer to start off with. And he said, I was getting way, way better results than anybody I know. But the word got out. He said, I never advertised it, never talked much about it, because I knew what the establishment would say about it. It was quackery or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the word got out because these patients that are dancing out of the office when they came in on a gurney, they talk about it. And so patients started coming to his clinic, and it was no longer by this time an eye, ear, nose, and throat clinic. It was a cancer clinic, and people were coming from all over the world, and I didn't know that at that time. So that's the story he told me.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, now the medical profession has found out about it, and they threatened me that if I don't stop this immediately, they're going to take my license.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I need to tell the story. Will you help me write it? I said, sure. That sounds interesting. I thought it would be a three-day project, you know, just to read about it a little bit and ask a few questions and then just write it up. But it turned out to be... I don't know, a three-year project.
Wow.
yeah, something like that. Wow. And it changed my life. It just changed my life. I wouldn't be here today if I hadn't learned about that. Because it made me realize that almost everything that we think we know that it is really important in our lives is a lie.
Mm-hmm.
When I realized that money was a lie, and now I found out that cancer treatments were a lie, what's more important than that?
Yes.
So that changed my life. And in my own family, I've seen, we have some members of our family that are alive because of the treatments. So I wrote the book. It took me quite a while. I sat at the feet of listening to the great scientists and doctors who really knew about this stuff. Dr. Richardson was very open about it. And of course I met the originator of this whole treatment, who was Dr. Ernst T. Krebs Jr., who was the inventor of all that. Oh, not the inventor, but the discoverer of the chemical and pioneer in using it for cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat in his office many, many an hour. He's a portly gentleman. He would sit back and he put his fingers together and said, well, let me think about that for a moment. And then he'd go off.
How did he discover it?
Hey, it's Ben Ferguson, and I want you to pause what you're doing for just 1 minute, and I want you to hear about love, generosity, and compassion. We say those words all the time, and they sound good. They feel good. But here's the truth. Those words don't mean anything unless they turn into action. And right now, not later today, not tomorrow, there's a child in the world who doesn't know if they'll eat, if they'll have a chance to learn, or if there's any hope at all. And while we're all busy, life keeps moving forward, but that child is waiting. This is where you come in. With Compassion International, you have the chance to change a child's future. Not just with words, not with promises, but with real help that provides food, education, and hope through local churches and people already in their community. Put your words into action and join me. Introduce a child to a loving Heavenly Father today at compassion.com. That's compassion.com.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spend it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
How did he discover?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. His father was a doctor, an MD. He was not an MD doctor. He had his PhD degree from some smaller institution, which they like to hold it against him because it wasn't from Harvard or something like that. he was a PhD, but his doctor was a pioneer in that. So his doctor and his father and he worked together on all kinds of herbal constructions from nature, because they had already discovered in their minds that nature has the cure, not the test tube. So that's where they were experimenting, and they found that the use of Laetril, or the substance, now there's this whole big story behind it, so that's what the book was about. I'll just give you one quick example. One of the clues to this was the fact that in the Midwest it was quite common for farmers to see that their cows would develop cancers of the mouth and the lips and so forth, and other parts of their bodies in the wintertime. But they would usually go away in the spring.
Hmm.
And they said, why is that? There must be something about the weather, you know. Well, then they got to observing that it happened shortly after the green sprouts came up through the snow in the spring, when the snow started to melt and the first greens grasses started to come up through the snow, and the cows would eat the green grasses. And it turns out these broadleaf grasses are very rich sources of amygdalin.
Mm.
So that was the kind of clues that they had. How they discovered this is by, you know, scientific method. And so anyway, that's how it started. And so John asked me to help him write the article, and I did, and that led to the book. And
then what happened? I bet they. That was a hornet's nest. When we look at what happened in the last few years, if anybody comes up with any treatment other than the one that they've decided they're going to sell you, they come after you in every way. We've seen that with ivermectin, HCQ, anything else that anybody comes up with. And so everybody, this has been on public display now, but you lived this. I guess the book was written in 1970. You've done an update, I think, in 2010 or something like that.
Yeah,
But you know, this is back in '60s, I guess, where this was happening. But you know, when you were publishing it, so what happened after you published this? What was the firestorm?
Well, that's an interesting story. I published it, and we sold it as a little. I had a little publishing company by then, American Media, and we had a brisk sale on it. And I went to a book convention in San Francisco shortly after the book was published. And that's where all the biggies came, you know, these big exhibits that half a block wide. And let's see, which one was it? It was the little pocketbooks. Well, Bantam was there. And I thought, well, maybe we could convince Bantam to reprint this and put it on the big market. So it just so happened on the morning of the first day, the president of Bantam was there on the floor when I was there, and I saw this cluster of people around him, so I thought, I'll get in line. So I did, and so I went up, shook his hand. I said, I'll make this short, Mr. Smith, or whatever his name was. I said, we have this book here on Laetril, and it's curing cancer. You probably have heard about it in the newspapers. There's a big controversy over it, and I'd like to give you a copy and see if it sounds like it's something that Bantam would like to run with. So he gave it to his assistant, who was standing next to him, and he said, yeah, we'll look at this. Well, they called me later in the afternoon, and they wanted to have dinner with me, and they wanted to talk to me about printing the book. So, make a long story short, we did. We signed the contract. Wow, we got Bantam to publish our book, and they put it out. They made it they had a special name for it. It was a special edition that they can produce a book in, I think it's 48 hours, something like that.
Wow.
And they just work around the clock. They have teams of people, and they work 24 hours to get the thing out in 48 hours or something like that. And they did that with this book. And it went on the book stands, and it was selling like hotcakes.
I bet.
And then all of a sudden, we got this message that it's out of print. Nobody can get the book. It's out of print.
Huh.
And so we checked it out. Sure enough, it's out of print. How come it's out of print? And I called the publisher, and they said, well, there's no demand for it. What do you mean there's no demand? The bookstores are clamoring for it. Well, our statistics show there's no demand for it. Well, we couldn't convince them otherwise. They just didn't want to reprint it. So it was clear that somebody on the board of directors at Bantam got the word. Hey, you guys made a big mistake. You published the wrong book. Mm-hmm. And so we were clamped out. We had one printing, and that was it. It was glorious for a few weeks, but after that, it was deader than a doornail.
Story of my life. You talk about the pharmaceutical companies, they come after you and they get you shut down. It is amazing. But again, you know, people can find that at rncstore.com. I know that he sells it there. And, very important for people to.
Hey, it's Ben Ferguson, and I want you to pause what you're doing for just 1 minute. And I want you to hear about love, generosity, and compassion. We say those words all the time, and they sound good. They feel good. But here's the truth. Those words don't mean anything unless they turn into action. And right now, not later today, not tomorrow, there's a child in the world who doesn't know if they'll eat, if they'll have a chance to learn, or if there's any hope at all. And while we're all busy, life keeps moving forward, but that child is waiting. This is where you come in. With Compassion International, you have the chance to change a child's future. Not just with words, not with promises, but with real help that provides food, education, and hope through local churches and people already in their community. Put your words into action and join me. Introduce a child to a loving Heavenly Father today at compassion.com. That's compassion.com.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps.
In line at the grocery store,
at a funeral,
in traffic.
Keep your eyes on the road.
Hop on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly.
Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.
Take control of their life, to question what they have been taught, and to think critically. And that really has been the story of your life, I think. Questioning what a lot of people just accept as fact. And you have done your research, and you gave people your opinion. And I think when their response is to just shut things down, that's something of an endorsement of your research, I think, when their only response is to censor you.
Yeah, in sort of a backward way, that's a pretty good recommendation. It depends. I've been censored by the best.
That's right. Well, tell us about the Red Pill University and the Red Expo, which is coming up November 16th through 17th, right? Tell us a little bit about it.
Yes, that's our big flagship event. We started the Red Pill Expos in 2017, and they've been just roaring successes. We were very skeptical about it at first because, you know, the red pill meme, in case there's anybody listening that doesn't know what that means, it's based on a sci-fi movie. It's about 21 years ago now, called The Matrix. Mm-hmm. And the whole theme of the story was that humans were now living in a fantasy world. They were all wired up to machines and they were dreaming about their lives. They weren't really living them. And they thought they were going to, you know, work every day. They thought they were raising a family, going on vacation, eating meals and so forth. But it was all programmed into their minds. And and they were controlled by the Matrix. That's what they called it. That was this computerized reality. And the only way to get out of that was to take the red pill. There was the blue pill, which you could take if you chose to, which would put you back into the illusion, but to get out of the illusion, you had to take the red pill. And it turns out that many people chose the blue pill because it was more comfortable. They'd rather not know that they were wired up to a machine. They'd rather think they were living a normal life. It was more pleasant. than knowing that you had to fight the matrix to exist. So it was kind of a good parallel to the reality. So we thought we would call this the Red Pill Expo and deal with topics like that, that we wanted to expose the reality and that's underneath the illusions. Mm-hmm. And as I said a moment ago, it seems like the more important something is, the more likely it is that we are in illusions about it, because it's to somebody's best interest to do that to us.
Yes.
They profit from our naivety and our false beliefs.
Now, where can people go to get this? You've got
redpillliberty.org? Yeah, we have done physical events from the beginning, and they were very well attended and very successful. But this time around, we've decided to go 100% live stream, primarily so that we can cut expenses on the overall production and make the event absolutely free instead of having to charge tickets for it. Because we want, this is not about money, it's about getting the word out. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're doing this time, and it's working pretty well. We're very impressed by the response. But we want as many people, this is globally now, around the world, to sign up for it. And you can find all the information, who's going to be speaking, what the events are, what the topics are, and a lot of insights as to the themes and so forth, on redpillexpo.org.
Okay.
Redpillexpo.org. Good. So sign up. It's free. And we do have an option for those that want to come in on a VIP basis. They get some extra goodies if they want to do that. Like they can ask questions of the speakers. And
we've
got a raffle going on and all that kind of thing.
That's great.
It would be nice to be able to pay the bills. But we want this free, if necessary, to anybody that can't afford $10 or $20 or whatever it is as a donation. It's free. That's right. What our goal is, you see.
Good. And one other question I've got about it. I see that you've got a new book coming out that's coming up. It's called The Chasm, The Issue Behind All Issues. When is that coming out?
Well, the latter part is a tough one. Yes, I do have a new book. It's been coming out. It's been coming out ever since the day after 9/11, actually.
Oh, okay.
That's when I started to write it. The day after 9/11, that was, you talk about a red pill.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But the whole purpose of the book is to provide historical support for the fact that our war today that we're in is a war of ideas. It's an ideological war, and it's not between the left and the right. It's not between the Republicans and the Democrats, or the liberals and the conservatives, or the Nazis, or the communists, or the socialists, or all of these labels that we've been given to worry about. It's not the Masons, it's not the Catholics, it's not the Jews, it's not the black people, it's not the Christians, it's not the Muslims. All these divisions they want to get us focused on, you know, it's not about any of that. Those all little subsections play a part in it, but the overriding...
Hey, it's Ben Ferguson, and I want to be honest with you for a second about how an act of compassion really feels. A couple of years ago, I made the choice to partner with an amazing organization called Compassion International. Why? Because I wanted to sponsor a child in need. It was a nice idea, sure, but I had no idea just how much that simple act would change my life as well. I sponsored Nadia and got to watch her life change right in front of my eyes, going from starving literally alone on the streets to getting the health care and education she needs to reach her God-given full potential. I got to be a part of that change, and the light of that compassion not only illuminates in her, it illuminates now in me. That is the power of compassion. The light of Christ shines on all of us. Feel it for yourself. And change literally a child's life. Change the world. And you also change yourself. You can sponsor a child today. Visit compassion.com. That's compassion.com.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
controlling, dominating force behind it all is an idea. And it's a conflict of ideas, I should say, between something called collectivism and individualism. I found out in my research that those words were well known and used quite extensively 100 years ago. And you find them in the old books and in old newspapers, too. But modern, no, it's all been scrubbed. And for good reason, because those two words, as strange as they are to the ears of most people today, are fully describing the conflict between left and right and, you know, all these things we mentioned before. Mm-hmm. When you peel off the labels, you find it's collectivism versus individualism.
Yeah.
And so what is that? How do you define that? And that's what this booklet is all about, is I took all the issues in the big book that I'm working on to illustrate support for these principles. I've taken just the principles themselves and put them into a 50-page document, and I'm giving them away free because I'm afraid I'm not going to live long enough to get this bloody book finished, although I'm making progress. I want to get these principles out now. So about 10 months ago, we made this little booklet here. This is 50 pages. Yeah, it's the chasm, collectivism versus individualism. And it's everything I have learned about those two topics. It's all there in type. And we got some good illustrations. You can see those in the back to sort of illustrate the points that we're making. I think I have found very few open-minded people, and that's hard to define, but very few people who I would have considered to be on the other side politically from my position, mm-hmm. that after reading this and going over these principles, doesn't come to the point where they say, I guess I've been an individualist all along and didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
It's that simple. It's that clear. Mm-hmm. We get to thinking of, well, let me back up. The mantra of collectivism is this. The individual must be sacrificed.
Yeah.
Now, fully stated, it is the group is more important than the individual.
Yes.
And the individual must be sacrificed if necessary for the greater good of the greater number.
Boy, didn't we see that with public health and all the rest of stuff?
We see that with everything.
Yeah,
we
I know.
We see that with everything.
That's a good example, because they don't care about individual health, right?
No.
We don't really care if you've had any issues with any of this. You're going to do it. For the public health, for the public good. Everybody's going to have to do this. And I talk about that bureaucracy, the public education, and once they start talking about that, it is the collectivism that is there.
You find this issue underneath all of them. That's why I say this is the issue behind all issues, literally. And look at Pearl Harbor, look at 9/11, look at COVID, look at everything. I don't care what it is. You'll find that collectivism is the answer, what makes all of that seem justified.
Yes.
Lenin put it this way. Vladimir Ilyich Lenin said, if you want to make an omelet, you have to crack some eggs. And now, it can be said many different ways, but the greatest insults of history, the greatest outrages of history have been justified with this mantra. President Roosevelt and his team justified withholding information from American commanders on Pearl Harbor so that they were literally surprised by the Japanese attack. Mm-hmm. And they justified that, and they justified keeping the information unknown to the American people because it was a mark of statesmanship. It was a means of bringing about a greater good, because it was necessary to convince the American people that we needed to get into World War II as quickly as possible so that we can sit at the peace table afterwards and when we redivide the world, and we'll make it a better world. Mm-hmm. And we probably would save millions of American lives, too, because the Japanese surely would have come over and bombed our cities and so forth. And, you know, the average American said, I guess the 4,000 sailors we killed deliberately in Pearl Harbor was worth it, because it's the greater good of the greater number, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Everything that happens in this world that's horrible is justified by the perpetrators on the mantra of collectivism.
Yes. Yeah.
And
hey, it's Ben Ferguson, and I want you to pause what you're doing for just 1 minute, and I want you to hear about Alejandra. She lives in a remote community with very few resources and little to no health care. So when Alejandra gets sick, her parents have no real options, no doctors in their community, and no money for real medical care. By the third day, her body was shutting down. She woke up and just long enough to tell her mom, "I can't take the pain anymore. I can't keep going." Her parents drove hours to find a doctor who tried everything, but she needed a private hospital, and that was impossible for her family to afford. And that is when Compassion International stepped in. Now, through Compassion, Alejandra was treated, and against all odds, she survived. She lived because someone, just like you, took action. Right now, unfortunately, there are children just like Alejandra who won't survive unless someone like you steps in. Compassion International partners with local churches, providing children with the support that they need, critical medical care, plus food, education, and the hope of the gospel, all in Jesus' name. So help a child just like Alejandra today. You can visit compassion.com. That's compassion.com.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. Social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
It's time to recognize that. It's time to break that hypnosis that idea has over us. I learned that in school. They taught me that the greater good for the greater number was the ideal political position.
Mm-hmm.
And most people still think it is.
Yes. Oh, boy, we saw it in spades, did we? Absolutely amazing. Yeah, and I think you're spot on with that and so many other things. It's so interesting to talk to you. Had so many important insights throughout your life, and your work has been very valuable to so many people. And I haven't read The World Without Cancer, but that's my intention to read that. That's very, very important, especially when we look at the last 4 years, how the veil has been pulled back on what the pharmaceutical industry and what the government supposedly oversight people are doing for the greater good. You know, when you see people die miserably, and it's like, well, it's rare. It doesn't matter, right? It's for the better good, for the greater good, the common good. So we're going to approve this this drug that is out there.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us. And again, it's redpilluniversity.org, but you have redexpo.org. Is that the one where people go for the Red Expo that's coming up? What is the website?
It's redpillexpo.org.
Redpillexpo.org. Okay.
Yeah, redpillexpo.org. If you go there, you'll see who we have as the upcoming speakers. We still have three or four that we haven't put on the page yet.
Mm-hmm.
They're all dynamite. These people all have a red pill to share with you, and they're all really, really important. And so it'd be 2 days. I mean, be prepared to be blown away by information like this.
That's great.
It'll change your life.
That's great. Thank you so much for joining us, G. Edward Griffin. It's been a great pleasure talking to you. Thank you.
Thank you, David. I really appreciate it, and it's good to see you again on the screen, and we'll be talking later.
Thank you very much.
All right, bye-bye.
Well, what an inspiration G. Edward Griffin is. A real critical thinker, a visionary, a man with the courage to go wherever the truth leads him. And again, landmark books, You Enter Fearful Master, Creature from Jekyll Island, A World Without Cancer.
making sense common again. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
All right, joining us now is Alexandra. She has an organization, Just the Inserts, at justtheinserts.com. You can also find her on Instagram under that name, Just the Inserts, and also on X under that name as well. And I wanted to get her on because many of you know our family's history with this, and I think it is very important. We've seen what has happened to the medical community, and we need to take control of what goes into our body. And so there needs to be informed consent, and that's what she is all about. Thank you so much for joining us, Alexandra.
Thank you for having me on. It's a joy to be here.
Well, thank you. You know, the listeners here know the history of what has happened with my family. We just had our son was injured by what they call a floxin, you know, some of the fluorochloroquines and, you know, going back to Cipro. And when we went to another place where they had supplements, a drugstore, we went in, and Karen and I, we were looking for a particular supplement that somebody had recommended to kind of counter that. And the person behind the counter that was the pharmacist there was wearing a mask. And the other person, you know, we told him, well, we're looking for this. And so, why are you looking for that? And so we told him. And the other person that was there, that was just kind of a helper, wasn't the pharmacist, said, you know, it's gotten to the point where those inserts are so scary, I don't even want to read them. And I thought, wow, that is the saddest thing I've ever seen. Because you better believe that the stuff that is there is not only possible, but it was possible to such an extent that they put it in there to cover themselves. And so that's why I wanted to get you on and talk about Just the Inserts. How did you get involved in all of this? What's your background?
Well, like you and probably most people listening today, personal experience with pharmaceutical injury. I was active duty military, and there were several times when I was serving that I had an adverse reaction, but it wasn't enough for me to dive too deep into finding the inserts. It was like, okay, I had a neck sprain and they gave me Oxycontin and I ended up having severe constipation. That's odd. And it was just little things trickling here and there while I was serving that made me start questioning the products that I was blindly accepting. And then when I became pregnant, I was starting to become more natural minded. And I was in my third trimester and the midwife handed me a 1-page sheet on the Tdap vaccine. And I remember thinking, this is very odd. I cannot have most medications. I can't have raw cheese or milk or any of these other things. And yet an injection just didn't make sense for me. So I asked my mom to research it for me, and she researched it. And then when she came back to me a few days later, she had so much anxiety and urgency in her voice, almost as if I was standing on the edge of a cliff getting ready to jump off. And it actually really turned me off. She started sending me all of this information of saying I was going to die, my baby was going to die if I accepted this product. So naturally, like any millennial, I went on Instagram and I started researching myself. And then I saw the other side, the other polarizing view, that if I didn't accept this product, I was going to die and my baby was going to die. So I just felt that it was very polarizing. Mm-hmm. So because of who I am, I was trying to prove my mom wrong, and I wanted to just have what the government said about these products. I knew with my business background that every product on the market has to have some kind of legal documentation about the safety or effectiveness of that product. So I ended up finding the inserts. And as this was happening, in parallel to me researching vaccines, I ended up having my daughter. I declined the Hep B vaccine. I declined the eye ointment. But I had a 44-hour labor, and it was very traumatic. So I ended up accepting the vitamin K, the synthetic vitamin K injection, because I was told it was just a vitamin K. It was just a vitamin. However, in hindsight, after reading the insert, there are other ingredients, including benzyl alcohol, which now there's an added warning, boxed warning on the vitamin K insert that says it can cause gasping syndrome for infants and can be fatal. Of course, I didn't know this at the time. So my daughter ended up becoming injured from the synthetic vitamin K. And she had severe jaundice. She was colic. She had liver and gut issues. And I felt that the people that I had trusted, the people that I paid a lot of money to provide expert advice on, had not properly informed me of the potential known adverse reactions and risks that are on the FDA website, that are on manufacturer inserts. So I desperately was trying to find answers. I went to pediatrician after pediatrician, and every single time that I brought my daughter in, they were scolding me on not getting vaccines. And so here, my daughter had already been injured by a pharmaceutical product. Why would I introduce any more interventions, especially with what I had been researching on vaccine inserts? And so it just didn't make sense. And it made me dig my heels into the research. It made me start trying to find the answers. I don't have a medical background, so I was just going straight to the .gov resources, because my thinking was, if the government says this about these products, if the manufacturer says this about those products, then you can't really fight with that. That's pretty black and white.
Mm-hmm.
So I started sharing on my personal Instagram, and I got shadow banned and censored. I lost a lot of friends in that process, just by sharing .gov information. And that, to me, was even more of a red flag. Why am I being so ostracized just for asking questions? So I ended up praying, asking God. I remember distinctly I was on my exercise bike, and I had tears in my eyes because I had read story after story of injury, not just from vaccines, but from all pharmaceuticals. And I asked God for guidance, and I said, send me, Lord. I'm here. I will go. And then over the next few weeks and months after that, I started getting inspiration to start an account for Just the Inserts. And that's how it started. I started originally on Instagram. It grew so fast, so quickly. I had over 148,000 followers on Instagram in just a few short months. And then a week before the COVID vaccine was mandated by the Biden administration, I was deleted off of Instagram with no warning.
Yeah.
After the fact, Meta told me in, you know, their blanket statement that the reason why I had been deleted was because of a .gov study that I had shared. So I was deleted off Instagram for sharing .gov information. But you know, it was a blessing because I was pregnant with my second child at that time, and I ended up realizing that I was spending 9 hours a day posting and researching, and it really wasn't good for my own personal mental health and physical health. So I was off Instagram for about 8 months. And then amazingly enough, for some reason, when Elon Musk bought Twitter, I was magically allowed to be back on Instagram that same day with the same username. All of my content had been wiped, but I was allowed to be back on. So I slowly started rebuilding. And during that 8 month process, I had started focusing on my website, realizing, despite what we're told, the internet isn't forever, and starting to create more solid foundations for my research, saving it on hard drives, things like that. I got back on Instagram, rebuilt my website, and then this year, after having my third child, I realized I needed to put all of this in a book. I needed to have a physical copy of all this research, because it's so important for new parents, patients. Everyone needs to have informed consent, no matter your educational background, no matter where you come from. You need to know what manufacturers say about their own products. You need to know what the government says about their own products, or, you know, products on the market that they have approved and are regulating. You need to understand all that. And it's really hard. They've made it really complicated to find this information. So my goal is not to replace research. It's to streamline research. So everything that I put all out on Instagram, website, emails is all cited. You can go find it yourself. And I just took step-by-step instructions, or created step-by-step instructions, on how to find and read manufacturer inserts. Mm-hmm. And then in addition to that, most people were like, well, why do I need to read an insert? And just like your story, you said, the inserts are so scary. Why do I need to be reading them? And really, the foundational element of all of this is informed consent. We deserve to have all of the information that the government and manufacturers know about this product, at the very least, to make well-considered decisions for ourselves, for our families, and for our communities. And that's really why I continue to go today. Is I started with my own story, but what continues me to talk and advocate for other people is other people's stories. Even before we hopped on today, I was getting messages from people saying, I was injured by this. I realized I've been injured. How can I make more informed decisions in the future, and that's why I wrote my book. And
yeah, we have to do our own research. I mean, the pharmacist isn't going to tell you, the doctor is not going to tell you. As a matter of fact, I remember you talking about COVID and when that came in and when the hammer really dropped on people. I've had that experience as well because I've pushed back against the vaccines and pharmaceutical in general, but specifically the vaccines. But I remember one person filming it. Had the camera running in their pocket and they were giving out the COVID vaccine. She said, I'd like to see the insert for that. And I said, well, I don't know where that is. Well, could you get the pharmacist and tell him to come here so I could see the insert? They got the pharmacist and he says, I can't find it. This is really strange. There's supposed to be an insert for this.
And the reason why is because it was probably emergency use authorized. So I had pharmacists messaging me saying, there's no insert, or if there is an insert, it's a blank page. And so they did have insert like information called a fact sheet, but even then it was completely bare at the start of it.
Yeah. You know, when you look at this stuff, especially when you start to try to search it, as you talked about in your story, somebody prescribes you something, and I've gotten very careful about that. And subsequent to my son's injury, we got a prescription for, I don't even remember what it was for. I'm looking it up, and it was something that was kind of innocuous and everything. But you go to WebMD, and they'll just give you a regurgitation of what the pharmaceutical industry wants. You've got to almost go to, and I'm glad to see that your site is up, because what I would do, I would go to look up the term, and I would go to places where they're talking about it on Reddit or whatever, so that I can see what individuals' experiences have been, because the whole thing has been so covered up. It's absolutely amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, there is a federally funded study that identified only 1% of vaccine adverse reactions, and just a little bit more of that for all pharmaceuticals are reported in the passive surveillance system, and that's FAERS for drugs, the FDA's adverse event reaction system, and then VAERS for vaccines, the vaccine adverse event reaction system. And we probably all know, we've heard about VAERS.
Oh, yeah.
Because people were discrediting that after the COVID vaccines, almost as if it was just an office complaint box and that anybody could do a fraudulent report. However, if you go onto the VAERS website, it has a disclaimer that you could be fined and put in jail if you put a fraudulent report. And the FDA and CDC, HHS, NIH, they all speak to the importance of a passive surveillance system. So for any medical provider that is discrediting it, they're discrediting their own system. And I would caution them doing that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So when you're dealing with your doctor, what kind of things should you say to your doctor in order to, have a relationship with him, to question what it is that they're giving to you? Well, let's start with that, with the doctor-patient relationship.
That's a great question. I love it. So when you go into a doctor, you are seeking a service. They are providing expert advice based on the observations or any diagnostic tests or physical exams that they do in an appointment. So the first thing that you want to make sure when you go to a doctor is that you understand the diagnosis. About 20% of diagnoses are wrong in the United States. And so you just want to make sure first up, right out of the gate, that you agree with the diagnosis and that you are sure that the observations that you communicated to the doctor have been taken into consideration, and that any observations that they may have for you or your child, you agree with. That's the first thing that you need to be aware of. And if you don't agree with that diagnosis, you have the right to say, okay, thank you for your expert advice, pay them for their time, and then go somewhere else and get a second opinion and a third opinion and a fourth opinion. There's no limit on how many opinions you can get. That is the right as an informed consumer that you have when seeking healthcare as a service. So if you do agree with that diagnosis, say you do find a doctor that you agree with, they're going to provide a recommended treatment plan that might include lifestyle changes, nutritional changes, or pharmaceuticals or other kinds of medical product supplements. And each of those categories, you have the right to accept, delay, or decline those products in that treatment plan. So if you do accept a product, You are observant of any potential adverse reactions. You communicate any changes to your condition to your medical provider. If you decide to delay that product, maybe you want to gather more information about your condition. Maybe you want to research other alternatives within that pharmaceutical class or supplemental class, or maybe you want to come up with a holistic treatment plan where you have some pharmaceuticals, some natural supplements, some lifestyle changes, maybe surgery, things like that. Or maybe you decide to decline that product, and you can seek alternatives with that provider or find a new provider. So that's the basic process of informed consent. And all of it is in pursuit of having all the information that you need to make a well-considered decision about your health and your child's health.
Yeah, from my personal experience, I had, after a heart attack, I had a doctor who was prescribing some stuff to me that I had some questions about. I think it was statins that he was doing, and I'd known about statins. And so I mentioned some of the things to him about statins. I said, I don't think I want to, oh, you've been talking to Dr. Google, have you? And it's like, well, I guess we don't need to talk anymore.
I have a funny story about that. And this, it always makes me laugh when medical professionals say this, because when I was military, I remember going to the doctor and telling them my symptoms, and they, I kid you not, swiveled around in their chair, got on the computer, and got on Google in front of me, started searching my symptoms to try to find the diagnosis. And I remember that was such an aha moment, because I remember thinking, why am I here? The only benefit that you're providing me is access to a pharmaceutical that I cannot get myself. And it, it started to break down that perception, that preconceived notion that I had, that all doctors know everything that they're talking about. They don't all know everything. And I would also say that my community that I have, that Just the Inserts community, is predominantly medical professionals. Many nurses, many doctors, many pharmacists, many surgeons have reached out to me saying, I was never taught this in school. I was never taught how to read and find and interpret manufacturer inserts. The only time that medical professionals in their professional training that have been exposed to manufacturer inserts are because pharmaceutical employees or representatives have contacted them, presented parts of the inserts to compare advantages to a competitor.
Yeah, that's
true. And pharmaceutical representatives have confirmed that, messaging me as well.
Wow, yeah, and when you look at what the doctors are doing, in most cases, like I say, they'll look on Google themselves or the symptoms, and you stop and think about what they have become in terms of just a service that writes out prescriptions that you're not legally allowed to, things you're not legally allowed to get. Think how easy it's going to be to replace them with ChatGPT. You know, it was about 8 years ago that a study in South Korea said that by 2030, there was going to be massive unemployment, and one of the highest things that they had there was doctors, about 70% of them. And if you stop and think what it is, typically it's just looking up the symptoms and matching it to whatever the big pharma wants you to buy for that particular drug right now. And so I think that's where this is all headed, because they have basically made themselves largely irrelevant.
Sorry,
go ahead.
I was just going to comment on that. I actually just read an article recently that said there were several hundred people, and I can't remember the institution that did the study. I'll have to find it and send it to you. But they took responses from ChatGPT on certain medical conditions, and then responses created by medical professionals. And they asked these study participants, which response do you like better? And it was overwhelmingly positive towards ChatGPT.
Yeah.
And it was interesting, because they were saying medical professionals are less likely to be sought because people will go to ChatGPT instead, which actually can be quite alarming, because ChatGPT isn't autonomous. There are parameters that the AI works within. So you do have to be careful of that, but I found that interesting.
They will train it. And of course they spend a lot of time putting biases into the training. And so you can imagine it's going to be a fight from the pharmaceutical companies to make sure that the biases toward their particular drug, because they do that when they run the tests. You got three pharmaceutical companies. They've all got their own drug for this particular condition. And you'll find that when pharmaceutical company A pays for the test and the study, that they will be found to be the best one. When the other companies do it, they will pay for the study to find that they are the best one. So it's going to be who gets to put the bias into the ChatGPT. The other thing that's concerning about it, of course, is the fact that ChatGPT does hallucinate. And so it's kind of like, it's going to be kind of like going to a doctor who is microdosing on LSD or something at the same time. You know, you never know what you're going to get. It's like a box of chocolates.
Exactly. Go to ChatGPT if you want, but also read the insert just to confirm everything. And it's interesting you brought up the information from pharmaceuticals, because most of the time when I read inserts, I completely scroll past the clinical trial data. You can manipulate all of that data into however you want to, and you can see it when you start to get into the weeds of it. And I wouldn't recommend anyone first researching vaccine or pharmaceutical products to go straight to that section, because it is very overwhelming. I would recommend going to section 6.2, which is the post-marketing adverse reactions. According to the CDC, the definition of an adverse reaction is an undesirable medical condition caused by a vaccine or pharmaceutical, and that's why I would recommend going to section 6.2, because in 6.1 you can start to see where some of the these sections of the clinical trial data was exempt from the study because X, Y, and Z, and then you start questioning, well, why was it exempt? Because that obviously would have skewed the results. And so I would recommend people skipping that when they're first starting to research.
Yeah, you know, and it changes so rapidly. You know, we look at the fluorochloroquine and they continually tweak the formulation so they can, first of all, renew the patent, but then so that they can also make sure that you don't tie it to these other things that now have a track record that looks pretty bad. So they're constantly adopting a new alias is the way that I look at it. So how do you keep current with all this stuff? Because they're constantly changing it.
I don't, to be honest. I try my best, but there's no way. There's no way I can keep up with it. Even on X, I try to follow all of the CDC, FDA, HHS, all these things, and it's always changing. There are always things that are being added or changed, or I mean, even the flu vaccines, those get updated every year. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing this for 4 years now, and I've had to update my influenza webpage 4 times because they change so often, and sometimes they have a covers four influenza strains, and sometimes it's 3 influenza strains, and now they're talking about the mRNA, and now they're talking about combining COVID and RSV and flu. And so it's if you go into it thinking that I'm going to learn everything possibly human possible, you will overwhelm yourself, you'll burn yourself out. So my advice is that if you are being recommended a medical product by your medical provider, ask them to write down the trade name of that product, confirm the spelling, and then go to the FDA website, or you can go onto Google, go onto your preferred search engine, type out that trade name with FDA insert after that, and then you'll find the manufacturer insert. And I don't, if anybody's listening and they're frantically trying to jot this all down, I have a free training course on my website that goes step by step on how to do this. I also have it in my book, and it'll teach you that no matter what product comes to market, you can research it yourself. You can find the information that you need to. If the information is available, as we already discussed with EUAs, that information might not be available, which I would argue, why is that product being brought to market? But that's a whole different discussion.
Yeah. And, you know, and today it is really imperative because we look at simple things, you know, just like antibiotics or whatever. And they're constantly changing them, changing the formulation and making them more concentrated and things like that. So, you know, this isn't your mom or your dad's antibiotic. This is something that is very different. And because of the rapid change in pharmaceuticals, you really do have to keep track of this. And you really need to take it seriously. These people always dismiss it by, you know, whenever something happens, oh, it's rare, right? That covers everything. And it's like, well, evidently it's not so rare that it wasn't in the insert, and evidently, you know, even though it might not be a whole lot of people by your account, and we don't know because they don't necessarily bother to let us know. They'll list out a whole bunch of things, and that's the one thing that we need to not fall into, I think, is that mindset to tell ourselves, well, yeah, it says if I take this antibiotic, I could have a stroke, but I never heard of anybody having a stroke after an antibiotic, and yet it happened to my mother. And so they've got it there for a reason, and we need to be careful about that. What about the healthcare providers? I mean, talk to us. You said you got a lot of healthcare providers who go to your website, justtheinserts.com. What is it that you tell them in terms of, and tell patients in terms of what the relationship should look like for informed consent?
Well, I Bravo to all medical providers who are going outside the traditional training model of what they've been taught in school, what they are taught by professional private memberships such as the American Academy of Pediatrics, ACOG, all these other private entities that receive, they publicly acknowledge they receive funding from pharmaceutical industries.
Hey, it's Ben Ferguson, and I want you to pause what you're doing for just 1 minute, and I want you to hear about Alejandra. She lives in a remote community with very few resources and little to no health care. So when Alejandra gets sick, her parents have no real options, no doctors in their community, and no money for real medical care. By the third day, her body was shutting down. She woke up and just long enough to tell her mom, "I can't take the pain anymore. I can't keep going." Her parents drove hours to find a doctor who tried everything, but she needed a private hospital, and that was impossible for her family to afford. And that is when Compassion International stepped in. Now, through Compassion, Alejandra was treated, and against all odds, she survived. She lived because someone, just like you, took action. Right now, unfortunately, there are children just like Alejandra who won't survive unless someone like you steps in. Compassion International partners with local churches, providing children with the support that they need, critical medical care, plus food, education, and the hope of the gospel, all in Jesus' name. So help a child just like Alejandra today. You can visit compassion.com. That's compassion.com.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Bravo to the medical provider that is seeking their own information and taking it on themselves to go outside of that training model. I love hearing that. And there are more and more medical professionals doing that just from the 4 years that I've been talking about this. So My advice would be that when you are first going to medical school, most medical providers go because they want to help their patients, because they want to heal, because they want to see someone come into their office hurt and in pain and for them to leave to be better. And for them to understand that researching manufacturer inserts, researching potential non-pharmaceutical alternatives helps you do that. That pharmaceutical companies are not the arbiters of science. They are not the only ones that exercise science in pursuit of health and in pursuit of wellness. And I actually have an entire chapter of that in my book. And I cite from .gov resources. I cite from the NIH about chiropractic care, about Ayurvedic care, about traditional Chinese medicine. There are all these other models of health and healing that are accepted across the United States. And there was a study that was done, and this was about 10 years ago, and I believe it was 30% of Americans have had some kind of experience with unconventional healthcare is what they would call it. And so my advice to anyone researching is, yes, utilize the tools that are available to you, make informed decisions about them by reading the inserts, but also understand that there's not just those tools. There's a whole world of healthcare available to us. And I was actually able to attend the Senate roundtable discussion with Senator Ron Johnson in D.C. in person. And Robert Kennedy Jr., he at the end of his closing comments, he spoke to the entrepreneurial spirit of Americans and how there are healthcare providers going outside of the insurance models, going outside of traditional healthcare to provide health to patients. Mm-hmm. They might not be as marketed as well as other professionals, or they might not even have websites, but they're out there. And to start for them to realize that they can take their business and not be so beholden to third-party entities or to insurance companies to accomplish their goal of helping people.
Yeah, of course, part of the problem that we saw, especially through COVID, was anybody who bucked the system. And, you know, there's this whole, union or guild or whatever it is, and they'll come back and, you know, because everything is licensed and tightly controlled like that, we saw so many people get purged out of the system who did want to offer people different alternatives. And, of course, what the AMA has been pushing for a very long time after the Rockefellers is a paradigm of disease is something that's got to be killed. Well, unfortunately, sometimes the stuff that you use to kill the disease also kills you. Sometimes it kills parts of your body. Sometimes it's not just temporary. Sometimes it is permanent. And that's one of the things that's concerning about some of these antibiotics that are out there. It's that model, rather than building up your body and strengthening your immune system, doing things that are going to destroy your immune system or destroy other parts of your body. That's the key thing. And so it's a very, there are a lot of different paradigms out there. You're right. And it is very important for people to consider that. And I'm sure you've got some of that, on your website as far as informed consent, different alternatives.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I also have resources available in my training course and in my book. Physicians for Informed Consent is another great resource. And they actually just did an article discussing how for the flu vaccine, those that accepted the flu vaccine, the effectiveness overall isn't very good for the flu vaccine. I believe it's around 40%. But there was a study that was done that those that had accepted the flu vaccine were actually at a higher risk of other respiratory illnesses.
Yeah, yeah.
And so understanding many of the discussions that are done in a pediatrician's office, in a provider primary care physician's office, the discussion is very siloed. It's very, okay, we're going to discuss flu, and this is how, this is the product that you need to get for flu. But they're not realizing, what about the whole health? What about the whole body? Is this vaccine potentially going to cause issues elsewhere? Is it going to inhibit an immune response when this patient is exposed to other viruses? Or maybe you're, like you discussed, is it going to overtax their liver? And so they might not be able to detox the excipients in this product. Or is it going to kill their gut microbiome? There are so many other things that I believe the medical industry as a whole are not considering. They are just very siloed, and they're very focused on just one topic. And one thing that I've noticed too, reading inserts, is that there are so many inserts that say that they lower the effectiveness of other products. The great example is typhoid vaccine, and I discuss this in the book. I get asked all the time about people that are traveling internationally about international vaccines, and it says on the CDC website and on the manufacturer insert that the typhoid vaccine is limited. The effectiveness of it is limited when you take anti-malaria drugs. And so if you travel to a place like India, the CDC says, yes, take the typhoid vaccine, but also take your anti-malaria drugs. And then on the insert, it says the effectiveness of the typhoid vaccine is limited by taking anti-malaria drugs. And so just understanding that when you take a product, it could be limiting the effectiveness of another product or your body's immune response as a whole.
Yeah, when we look at drug interactions, that's one of the things that I've started to look at. Somebody recommends something to me for a blood thinner, for example, since I have AFib. They went and put me on a blood thinner, and as I look at it, and you know, I look at some products, or I look at a particular blood thinner, and the blood thinner says, don't take it with these other things. It's like, oh, okay, so then those other things would also thin my blood. Maybe they're not as dangerous. You know, and so, you know, or vice versa, you know, you go to the, yes, to the natural supplement, and it says, you know, be careful if you're taking blood thinners, because this or whatever, it's going to lower your blood pressure. It's going to thin your blood some more, whatever. So I've basically used that to avoid some pharmaceuticals when I look at it. But, you know, part of this, you mentioned your story, your mother doing research and trying to warn you about it. And when we have friends or we have family and we know something and we see something that is alarming like that, we want to grab them by the lapel and say, don't do it. Like you talked about, you said it was like your mother was like you were standing on the edge of a cliff about to fall off. And that's the way we feel about it. And so we get very compassionate about it. What is the best way to approach other people that you have found?
That's really hard. It's really complicated, especially when we have external forces, either a government mandating the product, or we have the social and cultural external pushes of the marketing posts of saying, get this to protect your grandma or get this to protect your community. It's very hard. And I think upfront we need to address that because it is a very delicate balance to strike. And I believe it really depends on your personal relationship with that person, understanding their personality, understanding what is going to resonate with them for them to start researching. I'm not the type of person to be told what to do. And so my mother should have known not to go through at that angle. But I understand. I understand now that I've done the research why she felt that way, especially because I was in my third trimester. I was getting ready to have that product at my next appointment. And so I do understand her sense of urgency.
Now, they used to never vaccinate pregnant women. And then, they crossed that Rubicon. And then through COVID and everything, they were demanding that pregnant women get vaccinated with this and that. I mean, it really is amazing how this is all set up. And again, going back to the paradigm, it's kind of the sense that if we can kill whatever that thing is that we think ails you, the operation is successful. Maybe the patient dies, but we don't care as long as the operation is successful rather than first do no harm. They have gotten so far away from that primary directive of first do no harm. It's just got to get rid of whatever that thing is, regardless of what happens to the person's health. And that's a thing that is very concerning. But again, I'm sorry, I interrupted. You were talking about how your mother was working with you. I mean, it's a difficult thing to try to, when we see how dangerous this is, to try to get it across to people, isn't it?
It is. And so my advice is to approach it in love, but in boldness, and to approach it in the sense of having all of the information cited. I actually have an entire chapter on this, and I do talk about it in my training course as well, that we have to first automatically assume that the person has good intentions for themselves and their families. I think when we go into it thinking nefarious, especially for friends and family, that can put you off on the wrong foot right out of the gate. And so to go into it that they are just trying to do the best decision with the information they have, and that you are tasked with the opportunity to provide more accurate information and to guide them in their path of research. And you're going to get much further in a place of love than and in a place of hostility. Mm-hmm. And so I provide just different resources for people to do that and to be able to not be so aggressive. And some advice that I give too as well is that if you do go into a provider and you like this provider, but they're forcing you to accept a certain product, to only bring .gov information. If you go into a medical provider's office with a .gov or a .com research resource like myself, like Just the Answers, like if you say, I got this from justtheanswers.com, they have been trained to discredit anything else that comes out of your mouth.
Yep.
So it's really important for you to go in with the .gov information, have the manufacturer inserts printed out, highlight them for the parts that you want to discuss with them, maybe even write the URL in the bottom of the web page if it isn't there, for you to have productive conversations with them. Some family members are the same way. That's how I was. I have gotten hundreds of messages from people saying, thank you so much for putting this information out there, because I was having circular conversations, debates, arguments with my loved one, and they just said, well, I want to hear only from .gov information, and they happen to find my account, and that's how they were able to have productive conversations. Some people also don't learn by reading. They are more visual or they're more auditory, so maybe you need to find a documentary. Maybe you need to find a podcast that might present the information in a different way, and that might be helpful for them to learn. One thing I did want to touch on when you were talking about pregnant women, another reason why I was deleted is because I had done a post about the ACOG pushing the COVID vaccines onto pregnant women, and I was getting so many messages of pregnant women skipping prenatal appointments or having anxiety attacks about going to a prenatal appointment because their provider was pushing the COVID vaccine so hard.
Wow.
And I was pregnant at the time, so this just struck a nerve with me. I was on pregnancy apps sharing information because women were asking, should I get it? Should I not get it? I don't know. My intuition is telling me no, but I don't have much information. And so I was sharing .gov information, and almost every single comment that I made was flagged and deleted by the app.
Wow.
And so it's hard. It's so hard because you want to get so mad and so angry. And believe me, I have every right to be mad and angry and aggressive. But that's when the Holy Spirit kind of takes over and reminds me that if you go in it too hard, too fast, I have to remember that I have researched fact A to fact B to fact C all the way to fact Z. And if you go in with fact P or somewhere else, that might put someone in the defense, and it might put them in a unhealthy way of responding to the information that you're presenting to them. So it is hard. It's very hard, and you really have to have, it's a little bit of an art trying to prevent the information to them.
Well, I like what you had to say about .gov. Because, you know, one of the reasons I look at it is like, you know, why do we have these arguments and fights? Well, many of us will look at this and we've done research and we'll talk to somebody and they'll say, yeah, but this authority figure says this. And it's like, don't talk to me about authority figures. Do your own
That's
research.
That's also a logical fallacy.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like, you know, I just have this knee-jerk reaction. It's like, why are you listening to these authorities? They lie about everything. And as you're pointing out, you know, we're at point Z because we've been seeing the authorities lying to us about everything. But they haven't noticed that. And so we jump into this conversation way down at a different place than where they are, number one. Number two, we get upset because they're so focused on authority figures. And I think your approach of saying, well, if we go with .gov information, we're fighting authority with authority. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a brilliant strategy. I think that's really great. And so, and it's also when we look at social media and the censorship that has been there, and I've experienced a great deal of it myself. When we look at that, we've got to get away from the social media walled garden that is there. And so if people go to a particular website, they go to your website, or they go to mine or whatever, or they go to a book, you know, that's the way to get outside of the system. We're all becoming trapped into focusing so much on social media, and it's only going to get a lot worse. Facebook is out there talking about how they're going to create AI friends for you to talk to. And it's like, what kind of a crazy world is this? I mean, this is like the worst dystopian ideas of Yuval Harari out there, you know, talking about creating AI friends to talk to you because you don't have any real friends of your own. It's going to be this massive web of deception and of control and of surveillance. And so we need to start going to directly to websites. Yours is justtheinserts.com. Going to a book. What is the name of your book, by the way? We didn't talk
about it. It's called Well Considered, A Handbook for Making Informed Medical Decisions. I made it very small on purpose. Mm-hmm. I have all the information you need, everything that I wish I would have known when I first started researching, and it's all sourced from .gov information. And one of the chapters that I have in here, I actually go into the potential financial conflicts of interest at the federal level and at the physician level. And I think that's important for patients and parents to understand as well, that when they walk into an office, they aren't just walking into a philanthropic environment where this provider is providing charity to you. It's a sales funnel. And having a business background, it's important to understand what you are walking into. So when you are, if your provider is becoming emotional about your personal medical decision, you could understand that there's a bias there and there's a potential financial conflict of interest. I get messages from people that are so worried about upsetting their providers, and they don't realize that it's not them. It's not you. It's them. It's not something that you need to take personally. If your provider is getting upset, they are now entering a medical coercion, medical bullying, and that's not your fault. That's their fault, and you need to safely remove yourself from that relationship and find a better, more qualified provider.
I agree. And a big part of this is that, you know, we have these campaigns by the media, or even if we get information from a health service provider, is to avoid the fear. You know, mm-hmm. fear is a thing that allows them to do whatever they wish to us. If we get afraid enough of whatever this is, regardless of what we have seen happen to other people, regardless of what we've experienced in our own life, if they can build the fear of the condition, let's call it, the disease or whatever it is, if they can build that fear up, they can sell us anything.
Yes.
And people will continue to take it, no matter, even if you have bad, adverse reactions to it, you keep taking it because you're so afraid of the disease. That's the key thing.
Right, it's comparative safety, and it's one thing that I've noticed continually reading .gov information is almost all of these medical products are the safety and effectiveness of them are deemed in comparison to potential complications to a disease or an illness. And that's not right. We need to be assessing them based on their own safety, their own effectiveness, not comparing it to anything else. Because you can make anything seem safe if you compare it to something that is more dangerous. And I talk about in the book how dangerous that comparison is and how unscientific it is because of what we know from the government-funded study about adverse reactions, how only 1% of reactions are accurately reflected. And then also, too, we haven't discussed that many vaccine manufacturers talk about shedding and the potential for shedding and how vaccine strains of a disease are out there, polio, flu, chickenpox, shingles, there are vaccine strains that the CDC is tracking. So when we talk about disease rates, measles outbreaks, was it from the vaccine or was it from a wild strain? I think that's very important for consumers to be aware of as well.
Oh, yeah. When we look at what is going on, for instance, in Gaza, they said, well, we tested the sewage and we found this polio out there. Well, it's polio from the vaccine. We've seen situations. I remember when they freaked out, they had four patients who got measles. And, of course, I'm old enough, we didn't even have any measles vaccines. And everybody got measles. Never heard of any serious reactions to anybody. Parents didn't, or they wouldn't have been having measles parties to make sure they get this over and done with.
I had rubella as a baby.
Yeah, there you go. And so, you know, we had all these childhood diseases, and it's easier to cope with them at childhood, and it was something that was, in fact, very rare. I remember a New York case where they had four measles cases, and everybody had been vaccinated at least twice, some of them more than that for that. Mm-hmm. So it very well could have been the vaccine itself that they were giving them. We never know about this type of thing. Talk to us a little bit about, as a parent, what you do for your children.
Well, the first thing, if I'm worried about a disease because of the hype that is done either by public health campaigns or influencers or anything that are talking about a disease, RSV recently has been discussed a lot, and now the bird flu is, I've just on my personal Instagram, I saw three influencers start talking about the bird flu. And so if you are exposed to something like that as a parent, naturally you're going to worry about it. I think as a parent, that's normal and that's valid and that's okay. So for me, what I do is I research the disease. I understand what are the early symptoms of this disease. What is the transmission? How does it transmit? Is it from fecal matter? Is it from oral droplets? Is it from exposure to somebody's blood? I want to understand how this disease or virus or condition or something, how does it spread? And then I want to know what are the potential complications of it. Once you understand the mechanism of action and how the disease presents in the body, then you can understand, okay, what are things that I can do to prevent this? If this disease is spread by somebody going to the bathroom, being exposed to fecal matter, not washing their hands like the polio virus, then I'm going to make sure every single time I'm in a public restroom to wash my hands and not excessively touch everything in the bathroom. My children have been trained from the get-go not to touch any mucous membranes. They don't touch their mouth, they don't touch their nose, they don't touch their eyes, they don't touch their ears when they're in public. As soon as we get home, we wash our hands, 20 seconds, cover everything. They know that, and that is a tool that can be used in disease prevention. Mm-hmm. I also make sure that their immune systems are constantly being supported. We ensure that the quality of food that we have is nourishing their body. I'm a firm believer that every product you put in and on your body can either help or hinder your health, and that includes food. And so we prioritize quality food. We prioritize sleep in our household. There are hundreds of thousands of to millions of research and data on the quality of sleep that you have can determine your immune responses, your immune support, your support system. If we know that we are potentially going to be around someone that was recently vaccinated, we make sure that we have some tinctures that we take to support our liver, to support our detox systems, so that if there is a shedding event or one of the things that I discuss are breakthrough infections, and this is heavily discussed by the CDC and FDA, especially for the COVID vaccines, they are tracking breakthrough infections. So when somebody is up to date on their COVID vaccine, according to the CDC, they can still have COVID and transmit it to other people, but they don't have symptoms. It's asymptomatic. So in my opinion, they're actually more dangerous because the symptoms aren't alerting them to stay home, and they are exposing themselves to everybody else, and there's no symptoms that could potentially keep them from spreading it to other people. So knowing all of this, I could be in as a parent, a state of fear constantly. And I will admit that there are times where I do fall into that camp of just being constantly afraid of everything coming after my child. But then that stress and fear itself will lower my immune response and also pass that stress on to my children. So instead, I have adopted the strategy of what can we do to support our bodies? So no matter what we're exposed to, either in the sky or pollution or toxins in our environment, we are prepared and we are supporting our body as much as possible.
Oh, I agree. And it all goes back to, you know, do we agree with their diagnosis? You know, when you look at the bird flu stuff, look at how many people have gotten it and they got pink eye. And so you talk about, you know, not touching your eyes, when you're out in public and everything. What about when you're working with bovine fecal matter? Because, you know, that is what we're seeing over and over again. These people got pink eye. Well, how often do they get pink eye normally if they're not washing their hands and working
with them? I actually just did a bird flu post last night because I was just so heated by these influencers saying, make sure you get your H5N1 vaccine. And like, that's not even commercially available yet. And they're already trying to push this. The only vaccines available are stockpiled by the CDC. But in the CDC guidance that I pulled, it said that the people that had been exposed to bird flu and had contracted the disease, they had prolonged exposure to dead birds or bovine fecal matter.
Who knows what that could have been? Yeah, exactly. Who knows what they could have been sick with? And you know, they get pink eye and they don't have any respiratory issues, no fever, any of that kind of stuff. It's like, don't call it bird flu. Maybe call it bird's eye. You know. Something like that. But there's a lot of heavy disinformation out there, and it's all about a campaign of fear. Leanna Nguyen is out there pushing this bird flu vaccine, and it's got a very, very dangerous profile. So people need to be very, very concerned about it. I've got a couple of comments here. Dougalug says, after my heart surgery, I quit all the prescribed meds within 4 months. Doc says, I prescribed those for a reason. But he said no more. It's like, well, okay, we don't necessarily agree with your reason. And of course, we're always looking to see what the issues are with it. Guard Goldsmith says, I'm going to ask if she took donations. So I look for a book, see about the training program. Those sound valuable. If I can afford both, I'd love to study based on her program. And again, you can find that at informedconsent.com.
Or just theinserts.com.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Justinserts.com.
And the training course is free. It's always going to be free on my website. No email required to access.
Good. Good. I was thinking about Guard again. He might be interested in talking to you as well on his program. He has Liberty Conspiracy. Jason Barker has another program. He says the bottom line is that since naturally occurring molecules can't be patented, they produce synthetic patentable drugs. They try to do the same thing that many natural things can treat. And Handy, who is a ER professional in Atlantic, says Atlanta says, even now I work with people who don't have a clue that VAERS even exists. Mm-hmm. They know playoff standings by heart, though.
And that's a failure of education for our healthcare providers. Right. Most of the time when the healthcare provider is researching a manufacturer insert is because they themselves are liable or they become parents. That is one of the top reasons that medical professionals have told me that they've read inserts, and that is a problem.
Wow. Wow. That is amazing. Yeah, the stuff that's in there is in there for a reason. And if it looks scary, you should be afraid of that. They only want you afraid of the condition that you're looking at. And so that's an important thing. Just the inserts, and it is very important that when we have informed consent, it begins with information. You can find a lot of information at Just the Inserts. Thank you so much, Alexandra, for joining us. Always great talking to you. Talking to people who have looked at what is happening with all of this stuff, and I think it is very important for us to understand not only for ourselves, but how can we have meaningful conversations with other people and to meet them where they are. And as I said, I think your idea of fighting this authority figures with authority figures of .gov, I think that is one of the best ideas. And, of course, people can find a lot of that information at justtheinserts.com. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
And now, the David Knight Show.
Hey, it's Ben Ferguson, and I want you to pause what you're doing for just 1 minute, and I want you to hear about love, generosity, and compassion. We say those words all the time, and they sound good. They feel good. But here's the truth. Those words don't mean anything unless they turn into action. And right now, not later today, not tomorrow, there's a child in the world who doesn't know if they'll eat, if they'll have a chance to learn, or if there's any hope at all. And while we're all busy, life keeps moving forward, but that child is waiting. This is where you come in. With Compassion International, you have the chance to change a child's future. Not just with words, not with promises, but with real help that provides food, education, and hope through local churches and people already in their community. Put your words into action and join me. Introduce a child to a loving Heavenly Father today at compassion.com. That's compassion.com.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot.
Moto's free to play, like food stamps.
In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic.
Keep your eyes on the road.
Hop on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly.
Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.
Handy sent this to me, and he mentioned this earlier on the board. He said when he talks to friends and family, they tell him, well, you're just looking for perfection. And they say, Jesus isn't on the ballot. And I put this up today. I said, you know, I always hear people say, Jesus isn't on the ballot. I've seen that over and over again. And so my response to that is, if Jesus is not on the ballot, then why are you Christian leaders so intent on making him Trump's running mate? You know, that's the problem I have with it. You want to go vote for Trump? Fine. Shut up and do it in the secrecy of the ballot box. Don't make Jesus the running mate of Trump or of Lala. They're evil. It is a shame to tie Jesus to that known evil. You want to vote for the lesser two evils? Go for it. But shut up about it. Don't tie him, don't make him the running mate of either of these candidates. So he says, what do you say to people that accuse you of looking for perfection when you point out everything that Trump did to us? Well, I would also say to them, at what point does integrity and character matter to you? If a person doesn't have integrity and character, they could be right on all, they could say all the right things about the issues. And then they could do what Trump did in 2020, right? So he says, well, I point out things like the executive order on Friday the 13th, 2020, or the bump stock executive order, or the lockdowns, or the PPP, or the Operation Warp Speed, and its continuing fruits, or Fauci on the podium, Fauci getting a medal. He says, it doesn't really matter. The more valid points I make, the more I'm accused of holding Trump to a standard of perfection. Well, here's the other thing, too. And I think we need to remember this when we're talking to friends and family. We have to understand that we have to keep coming back to what is right, not who is right. In other words, we want to keep it focused. When we're talking about Trump or we're talking about Lala, I just said, and I'm not going to pay any attention to issues for Dr. Shiva. Because the issues with him, again, are ballot access and debate access and getting your head out of this ballot box that they've put you in and start looking at how you can fix your life. That's his message to people. He's just using the presidential election to put them out there. But when we're talking about somebody who's really running for the presidency, and that would even include the third party candidates like the Green Party candidate, the Libertarian candidate, and the Republicans and the Democrats and so forth. When they're running and they've got a platform of issues and that's all it's really about, and they're not telling you, hey, your life lies outside of the ballot box. They're not telling you that. They're telling you, we're going to fix your life, and here's what we're going to do to fix your life. Well, now let's talk about the issues. And And let's talk about them in a way that doesn't get into personalities. Because if we talk about who is right, and this is what I don't like about the left, they demonize Trump for his personality and his history and so forth. He is a demon, okay? There's no question about it. Jeffrey Epstein is now surfaced, and it's like Michael Wolff, who did that biography on Trump, published some tapes where he was interviewing Jeffrey Epstein. Jeffrey Epstein said, yeah, we're best friends. And it's like, I know that. You think I don't know that? That's funny you think I don't know that. And he said he was afraid of Trump and so forth and so on. So he's putting this out as a last minute election thing, right? But we know about Trump's background. And to say that he's not perfect is the biggest understatement I've ever heard in my life. He is the very embodiment of every failing that a human being can have, I think. But if we make it about him, right, that's what the left does. If we make it about who, we're missing the point. If we make it about who is right, or even about who is righteous, see, we're not making about who is righteous or who is right. We're making about what is right. Was it right to do all these things that Handy just mentioned, that I've talked about so many times, the gun control by executive order, the lockdowns, the death by ventilator, all the rest? Was that right? Was that right? Are you okay with that? We don't have to make it personal about Trump. This is what the left is doing. They're making it, and that's what Trump does. He comes after people, and it feeds that. Both sides are feeding this.
Hey, it's Ben Ferguson, and I want to be honest with you for a second about how an act of compassion really feels. A couple of years ago, I made the choice to partner with an amazing organization called Compassion International. Why? Because I wanted to sponsor a child in need. It was a nice idea, sure. But I had no idea just how much that simple act would change my life as well. I sponsored Nadia and got to watch her life change right in front of my eyes, going from starving literally alone on the streets to getting the health care and education she needs to reach her God-given full potential. I got to be a part of that change, and the light of that compassion not only illuminates in her, it illuminates now in me. That is the power of compassion. The light of Christ shines on all of us. Feel it for yourself and change literally a child's life. Change the world, and you also change yourself. You can sponsor a child today. Visit compassion.com. That's compassion.com.
Moro Casino. America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Now, this person is more evil than that person. So we don't look at what, at the evil that they've both done. We have to look at what is right. Not sign on to a who. We have to sign on to a what. And if we have people who don't have character and integrity, it really doesn't matter what they tell you. And it really doesn't matter who you vote for, does it? Because there's somebody pulling the strings that's not on the ballot, and you don't see them. But we can see their agenda if we look at what happened during the Lala administration and during the Trump administration. We can see their agenda. So the key thing is we want to make sure that we don't live by lies. We want to make sure that we don't fall into that totalitarian trap of saying 2 + 2 = 5. We don't want to get involved in that kind of doublethink so that we actually not just repeat the lie so that we don't get punished by these people, but we actually fully embrace that. And as George Orwell said, the doublethink, that you can hold two mutually exclusive ideas at the same time and are completely comfortable with it. The vaccine was evil, but Trump had nothing to do with it. That's insane. These people have already, because of Trump, He has conditioned the MAGA voters to live by lies. And that's the conditioning that you need in order to establish a totalitarian, not just authoritarian, but a totalitarian state. You have to have that disconnect. And the La La people have it in the same way as well. And so we have to not live by lies. And so that means that you might want to look at it and you say, okay, Trump did this. Trump is a liar. Trump deceived us. Trump betrayed us. But I still think he's a lesser evil than Lala, so I'll vote for him. Okay, fine. I can live with that. What I can't live with are the people who say Trump had nothing to do with it. He had nothing to do with anything that happened in 2020, and he's going to fix it. I can understand the people who admit the truth and then make some lesser of two evil judgment, but I cannot understand or accept the people who will live by lies, the people who have put themselves into this Orwellian doublethink box. That is absolutely unacceptable. So Handy goes on to say, literally every person around me has fallen into this delusion. People who admitted what Trump did to us, and now tell me, you have to vote. He is our only hope. Ah, see, now we're getting into yet another thing. This is an even greater delusion. And this really is a idolatry thing. You know, and you just have to say, no, my only hope is Christ. Jesus is my only hope. He's my only king. And all the rest of these people, I don't have any trust in them. In God I trust. When I remind them about everything Trump did to us, just even and only in 2020, they accuse me of being a liberal Harris lover. This is coming from people I've known for decades. I can't even talk to any of them anymore about anything. This weekend I saw the last of them make the switch to full brainwashing. Tell me about it. I see my audience. I see comments on social media. Even people that I know personally that I've talked to who used to tell me to my face, I hate Trump. And I said, well, I don't hate him. I hate his policy. I hate what he's done. I really don't hate the man. Oh, I hate him. And now you see on Facebook, Trump 2020, same person, same person. That's insane. You just got to laugh at it. Look, it doesn't matter what happens in the world. You set up a relationship with Lord Jesus Christ. That's your anchor. That's your foundation. So he says, I'm in a little bit different position than most. What I've seen and experienced since 2020 is somebody's working EMS, emergency medical personnel. He says, since 2020, he says, this is straight out of a nightmare. Yeah. I wish I could forget what I've seen. No, don't ever forget it. Look at what is right, not who is right. So let's talk a little bit about the issues. Because whoever is selected, we talk about the issues, this is going to give us a little better idea of what kind of line of attack the collective behind Trump or the collective behind Lala.
You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Hey, it's Ben Ferguson, and I want to be honest with you for a second about how an act of compassion really feels. A couple of years ago, I made the choice to partner with an amazing organization called Compassion International. Why? Because I wanted to sponsor a child in need. It was a nice idea, sure, but I had no idea just how much that simple act would change my life as well. I sponsored Nadia and got to watch her life change right in front of my eyes, going from starving literally alone on the streets to getting the health care and education she needs to reach her God-given full potential. I got to be a part of that change, and the light of that compassion not only illuminates in her, it illuminates now in me. That is the power of compassion. The light of Christ shines on all of us. Feel it for yourself and change literally a child's life. Change the world, and you also change yourself. You can sponsor a child today. Visit compassion.com. That's compassion.com.
Moro Casino. America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
So joining us now is Matt Trujillo, who I have talked to several times about his excellent book and about the doctrine of the lesser magistrate. Thank you for joining us, Matt.
Good to be here with you, David, and I so apologize for all my technical problems.
No problem.
On my end.
No problem. It always has. It's live, so we have that kind of a situation happen frequently. Not a concern. Glad to have you on. Glad we got through to you. And again, your website is Defy Tyrants. Remind me, is that .com?
.com. Yep.
Okay, good. And that's where people can find a copy of the book. Of course, you can find it on Amazon, other places like that. But it's always good to not deal with Amazon, but to deal directly with the author helps them and helps us to get away from Amazon as well. So again, defytyrants.com.
That's exactly right. And plus, we send you a few extra items for free when you purchase the book at our website.
Good, good. Well, let's talk about this case. And I saw this part. I'm on your mailing list, and I saw this. It's now been a couple of weeks, I guess. An FBI agent who invokes the doctrine of the lesser magistrate. Tell us a little bit about just for people who have not heard you before. Give us a little bit of an overview of what is the doctrine of the lesser magistrate, and we'll talk about how that applied in the FBI case. But what is the doctrine of the lesser magistrate?
The doctrine is simply that when the higher ranking civil authority makes unjust or immoral law, policy, or court opinion, the God-given right and duty of the lesser ranking civil authority is not to obey. Mm-hmm. And if necessary, to actively resist the superior authority. So that's as simple as that. That's what the doctrine is. It's found in scripture. John Knox wrote the foremost treatise on the doctrine of lesser magistrate, I believe ever written in his 1558 appellation to the nobles of Scotland. The nobles were the lesser magistrates of his day. He cited over 70 passages of scripture in that treatise to show that this doctrine is sound in the word of God. And at the same time, we see that it's not only practiced in Christian nations or in the Jewish nation, but we see that it was also practiced in non-Christian nations, showing that it's natural to man.
Yes, yes.
And I actually start out my book with a story about a Roman governor who interposed against the emperor Caligula.
Yes. And again, if you want to have rule of law, you have to have that. Because otherwise you're going to have a dictatorship. If it's just going to be, executive orders about this and that, if you're not going to have the rule of law, you have to have some, you have to repair back to a standard that is going to be there. And that's what this is truly about. And so there has to be a legal standard, there has to be a moral standard, and that needs to be above men. That is the foundation of Western civilization, really.
Yeah. If you give any man or any human institution unlimited power, unlimited authority, they will corrupt themselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's just read the history of man. It's a no-brainer. And so you want...
And we've lived that. We've lived that. That's our lived experience right now here in America in the 21st century. It's not a theory. It's not something out of the history books. We can see it right now. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, tell us a little bit about this FBI whistleblower then invoked the doctrine of the lesser magistrate.
Well, his name's Garrett O'Boyle. And believe it or not, he actually hails from like 20 miles from where I live, where That's I'm good. Sitting right now. And we put up his he gave a talk in Idaho. And so we put that talk up on our website, defytyrants.com. If people go there, they can see what he has to say. Just follow the link and you're right in. Mm-hmm. And when you hear him talk, you're like, thank God there's FBI agents who think like this guy does, because he understood his duty in order to interpose and be a whistleblower. Mm-hmm. So he's in the FBI for 4 years. He was a Waukesha, Wisconsin police officer prior to that, has a wife, 4 children. And the FBI, of course, starts acting crazy, in 21, 22, late 20. So he begins to bring this to Congress's, you know, purview. Mm-hmm. And there's laws about this, about whistleblowers and how they're to be treated and whatnot. And the reason he did it, David, is because he saw that the FBI was using foreign counterterrorism measures on U.S. citizens, including moms and dads, mostly moms, who were going to school board meetings because they were bothered about their kids being masked up. And of course, then it bled into other areas where their children are being taught despicable things that they knew nothing about prior to the masking. They're using those counterterrorism measures for foreigners on American citizens. And those are the American citizens they're concerned about that they want to use these measures on. That's what he was whistleblowing about. That and other things, but that was a big one.
And yeah, that's interesting, isn't it,
what Matt? The FBI was doing.
Yeah, let me just interject here. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you know, that's one of the things I said, the golden lining, a silver lining or whatever, this cloud of lockdown. You know, God works in mysterious ways, doesn't he? And so as kids are locked down and they have to do online school, parents finally were able to see what was actually happening in their child's classroom. I've had this discussion with parents for decades, you know, going back to even before we had our own kids, trying to tell them of my wife's experience in teaching school and things like that. They would never believe what was happening in the schools. They would always say, well, that's another school, even if it, you know, came to their state or it came to their particular school. No, the teacher in my classroom is fine. They were finally able to see that, yes, it is happening in my child's classroom. And so I think that that was a real blessing from God. Sometimes we see that in the storms of life, and it educated so many parents. But then when they go to the school board to complain about it, the FBI starts tracking them.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we had the same experience as you. You know, all of a sudden all these people in the early 2020s are telling us, can you believe what these schools are teaching my son, my daughter? It's like, we've been saying this for 30 years. It's like they just had this revelation. Yeah. And of course it was good to see parents realizing these things and understanding their duty and no longer just shirking it. And of course they were still a minority, right? Yeah. Maybe made up 10 or 15% of the parents overall. But that's a huge number for the American response to evil.
Oh yeah.
So it was encouraging to see, so many parents realize for the first time, and it led to many of them either pulling their kids out and going to private schools or homeschooling.
Yeah. And that's the other thing, you know, all this stuff about socialization, you've heard it as well. Well, what about socialization? It's like, yeah, what about socialization in 2020? How did that work out? You know? And so it just, by that awful thing that we went through, God just pulled back the curtain and showed anybody who wants to, there's no excuse for people to not understand that now. They lived it. So.
Exactly. You know, and they're concerned about, you know, social maladjusted. Your kids will be so. I heard that beginning. Me and my wife were homeschooling back in the 80s, early 80s.
Yeah.
And you were an oddity at that time. Much more common now. Back then you were weird.
Yeah.
And, oh, they'll be socially maladjusted. What we found was, you know, homeschooled kids can actually have a rational conversation with adults.
Yes.
Meanwhile, the kids going to the government school are pondering whether they should use the kitty litter box to go to the bathroom or not inside the public restroom. That's Who's right. got the crazy problem here?
Yeah, I remember, and you know, I lived through that because I went to a government school. If somebody is a year older than you, you were afraid of them. If they were a year younger than you, you had contempt for them, that type of thing. You could see that throughout the, you know, and so I'd say, yeah, when we talk about socialization, maybe they should be socialized by their parents rather than a kind of Lord of the Flies type of right. socialization, which is what they were getting in the schools even back then before they started all of this active agenda of propaganda, sexualization, and all the rest of the stuff that we now see. I mean, it really got bad. But, you know, even when we look at the FBI, looking at people, we had, back in 2013, Ed Snowden showed us that they were spying on Americans, you know, for no reason at all. And we knew that, you know, James Clapper was questioned about that just a couple months before Snowden released the stuff. But even going beyond that, the whole reason that we had FISA was because from its inception, you had the CIA and the NSA spying on Americans without a search warrant, listening to their phones and so forth. So this has all been there. They created FISA to stop it. And then these people used FISA to give them legal cover to continue to do what they have been doing from their inception right after World War II. And so it's good that this stuff is coming out. And it's really yes. good to see FBI agents who become whistleblowers about this. But again, it's still an issue, just like people seeing what's happening in the schools. How do we motivate people to do something about it? But it's very important that you have a whistleblower who does that. And I talked to, the FBI agent, Friend, I think his first name was Steve Friend, talked to him a while back, and he was also, somebody who was going to do the right thing. He was not going to violate the law. He was not going to violate his moral principles. And so they kicked him out, like so many people in the military who weren't going to violate their moral principles over the vaccine and other things like that. These institutions, it's just an evidence of how corrupt they are that they eject people who have, moral concerns or want to obey the Constitution, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. And he actually, Garrett Boyle in his interview, if people take the time to watch, and I would encourage them to do so, talks about the fact that he believes the FBI is so corrupt that it needs to be abolished. And one of the things he talked about also is how few of them, there's like five or six FBI agents that became whistleblowers of all this evil's going on.
Yeah.
What does that tell you, David?
I know.
It tells you that the history books are right, that most people go along to get along.
That's
that
right.
They only look out for themselves, that they accommodate themselves to the evil. They actually aid and abet the evil,
mm-hmm.
either through their silence or their complicity with going along with the evil edicts that are made. So men like Garrett Boyle are massively rare,
yeah,
and unfortunately. And so I would encourage you to take the time to listen to what he has to say and see how he thinks, because when you hear him, he's a Christian man, and he's theologically driven. It's interesting because he mentions in there that the first time he heard about the doctrine of the lesser magistrate was from a CI, a confidential informant. So, because they were spying on pro-lifers. The FBI's spying on pro-lifers. And so his confidential informant tells him, "Oh, you're from Wisconsin? Have you ever heard of this pastor, Matt Chiuella? And he wrote this book on the doctrine of the lesser." And he goes, "That was the first time I ever heard of it," and began to study about it. And he does a great job. To hear a former FBI agent talk about the doctrine of the lesser, who's actually demonstrated to the hazarding of his own life and family,
mm-hmm.
you have no idea how good that is to the heart, David. So encouraging to see.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, yeah, and that is what you said is so important. How few people push back. You know, how few people push back about this in any of these institutions. Whether you're talking about the FBI, you're talking about the military, whether you're talking about the hospitals, right? They're literally killing people on ventilators. And I interviewed a woman who wrote Pandemic Nurse. She volunteered to go up to New York from Florida because she said, "I didn't see any pandemic in Florida," so she went to New York. They let her sit around for several days before they brought her in. Then when they gave her the tour, the doctor says, "You know, these ventilators, more than, you know, 88% of the people, whatever, high 80s, are going to die from this stuff." It's like, what is going on with this? But they were fine. You know, they were fine to do that because they were getting paid. And that's what we see in all of these institutions. You know, the only way that we're going to have any change is if you're going to have people like Garrett Boyle, who is going to stand up to this. O'Boyle is his name. Garrett O'Boyle. Garrett, G-A-R-R-E-T, and it's O apostrophe B-O-Y-L-E. That's how you spell his name if people want to look this up. Where can they find it? Can they find the link to this interview of his?
Right at our website. It's our top story. It's defytyrants.com. You'll see it right there. Just, if you're on your phone, you got to scroll down a little bit, but on your, if you're on your laptop, it'll be right there.
Good, good. That is key.
You mentioned pay, and that is a huge thing, because I was amazed, like during COVID, for example, and all what was going on there, how many people would comply just to keep their job. And of course, you're mentioning something more dire about COVID, where they're actually using protocols that are killing people.
Yeah.
And yet people would go along with it for the pay. They would justify it all in their mind, David, as, well, I got to provide for my family and I need this job. And I'm just like, who am I living amongst? Because most of them claim Christ America still and go to church. And you think like that? What are you listening to from your pulpits?
That's right. You don't think that God's your provider? That God won't, if you do, that what you're saying is that if I do the right thing, God's not going to provide for me. That's right. The antithesis of what we see throughout the Bible. God always provides. You may go through some difficult times, but he's always going to provide everything that you need. That's the promise. And if you're a Christian, you should be believing God for the promise. But what that is an act of denial of God, of disbelief, that God would be just and that he would honor those who honor him. That is a foundational thing about your relationship and your understanding of God. I saw a lot of people who, they didn't have a moral issue with the vaccine, but maybe they didn't understand that aspect of it. I think there is a moral issue to it, but that wasn't their concern. Their concern was that it was this thing that was untested, and it was a situation where they had to take it or lose their job, and so they took it, and then they were seriously injured. And they couldn't do their job, and that's the other part of the trade-off with it that just didn't make any sense.
Made no sense whatsoever.
No.
Yeah, I have a son who was in the military, had a medical discharge, so he has to go every year and get checked out by a doctor. And in fall of 2020, the doctor he meets with is the same guy he always meets with, and he says, can I get a letter from you about not getting the shot? Because at that time they were talking about it, and it hadn't come out yet. And the doctor laughed at him and said, they're never going to make anybody get the shot. Well, the next year that he came for the same appointment in September of 2021, the doctor is there, same one. And my son says, do you remember our conversation last year? And he goes, yes, I do. And he goes, I had to take my first shot in March this year. And I've had nothing but problems within my body since then, with severe back pain and other things, he said. So much so, and he's about 58 years old, 60 years old, right in there. So much so that I'm thinking about quitting my job because of how it impacted my health.
Wow.
He said, but I just decided a week ago, I really need my job. And so I'm going to get the second shot because it's mandatory to get the second shot. You know, he's in the Veterans Administration.
Oh.
And think of that, David.
Yeah.
I just can't contemplate that in my mind. Where is the trust in the Lord?
Okay.
Like you're talking about. And, you know, you look at, and, but this again has always been a problem. So few people willing to stand. I mean, Abednego and the other two weren't the only three young Hebrew men in Babylon at that time, you know. There were tens of thousands of them and three stood.
That's right.
What in the world? So yeah, as Christ people, especially we name the name of Christ, we should stand true to him, to truth, and, interpose in a way on behalf of our neighbor.
It isn't that always, it comes back to these same fundamental things that Jesus hammered all the time, fear. Who do you fear? What do you fear? Do you fear a virus or a pandemic or disease, or do you fear God? Who do you trust, and what do you love? Do you love money more than your fellow man? Are you going to go through these procedures at the hospitals and do this to other people, or even do it to yourself? because of the love of money, that is the key thing, you know. And it's just these fundamental things that everything else is built upon. And it's really taken us down this path. I've talked to people, police officers who've been injured and can't work anymore. I've talked to a surgeon who can't do it anymore because his hand shakes all the time. It's just horrific. And yet there's been no accountability for any of that's the other thing too, right? As Christians, we have to also, if we've been injured or we've had loved ones who have been injured or killed, I have a lot of listeners who've lost family members, spouses, and other things like that. We have to understand that justice is with God, and and leave that with Him, and actually move on, and not let that eat at us. We have to forgive that and move on. But we don't see any justice at all coming from the government. The government's job is not to forgive this kind of stuff, but to have an accounting for it. And yet we see exactly the opposite. The people who have been rewarded for this, the people who get to run again for president, the people who are talking about, well, next time, let's make sure that we get the money from the mRNA to go into a sovereign wealth fund. That's what Lutnick is saying yesterday. Yeah, all they're looking at is the money. How do we make more money out of this type of thing? And there's no accountability for these people. Fauci is free.
Yeah.
And, all these people are free. Yeah.
And new schemes too.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to get a vaccine for cancer,
mm-hmm.
for mRNA.
Yeah. Designed by AI.
Exactly. Within 48 hours.
Yeah.
I can see them lining up for that one. And you're just like, you have to speak out when you see that kind of thing so people can understand what's right and what's true. And unfortunately, you know, I am a churchman. I pastor a church here, and we have, you know, about 250 people in the congregation. And what I found is most of my fellow churchmen are absolutely silent on anything dealing with injustice,
yes.
Whatever area it may be in.
That's right.
Including what all went on with COVID.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So much so that, you know, like, there's a guy here named Scott Shera who has a case that hasn't been crushed yet, because most of them have been, that's moving forward because they killed his daughter.
I know. I've interviewed Scott many times. His daughter, Grace.
Yeah.
Yeah. My Amazing Grace, I think is his, or Amazing.
Yeah.
I think it's My Amazing Grace. Yeah. I've talked to him many times, and that's a landmark case. That could make a big difference for a lot of people, because one person stands up. You get an FBI whistleblower who stands up, or somebody like Scott who stands up and says, well, I'm going to make sure this doesn't happen to somebody else. And that is a landmark case, because it's not simply about malpractice. It's about the malicious acts of people who knew what they were doing. And that's what we've seen over and over again.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so he'll tell you, no churchman want him talking about what happened with his daughter anywhere.
Really?
That's how pietistic American Christianity has become. He attends our church from time to time. He's 2 hours away. He was just there last Sunday. Another man who took his case because they wouldn't let him use ivermectin. He was dying in the hospital, was there for months. His family intervened for him with even public protests. Yeah, he's come to Christ since then. He attends our congregation now.
Wow.
But so rare are the churchmen who speak out that people, if they just spoke out on these things, would be drawn to hear what they have to say and would then hopefully come to know Christ as their Savior.
That's right.
And these are important matters. I got to grab my charging cord because my thing's about to die on you.
Sure, absolutely. Well, while you do that, let me read this comment from Holistic Nurse, one who says, fear is mentioned in the Bible over 300 times, and most Christians in name aren't reading His Word. That's right. How many times do you hear in the Bible, fear not, fear not, fear not? And you don't really understand who God is if you're afraid. You really don't. And if you step out in faith and take these challenges, then what that does is that helps you to see God. You know, when we go through these dark times and we step out in faith to say, well, this is really scary, but I'm going to follow God. I'm going to follow these moral principles. What you find is that God has your back. I've seen that over and over again. I love the illustration out of John Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress, where there's a couple of lions on the path that he's got to go through. And he finally gets the courage to get up there close to him, and he realizes that they're on chains and they can't get all the way to him. But we understand that even if We get ripped apart by lions as many of the early Christians did. We understand that that is not the end of things. And it's that understanding of what our relationship is with God and what this life is just a small little blip before eternity. Those are the things that should keep us from being afraid, aren't they? Are you back, Matt? Okay, good.
I'm here, yes. Yeah, and I want to, the tender care of God for his people is seen again and again. We saw it during COVID. I mean, we had one family, they had 8 kids. The guy worked for a company for 20 years, wasn't going to go along with the fiction, lost his job, but God used it all for good. And we saw that with several other people in the congregation, lost their jobs because they wouldn't go along with the fiction. And some of them might have had a harder time for a short time, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. but in the end, they could see the goodness of God and how yes. that all played out because of their simply being faithful to him, trusting in him. I remember when I was a young churchman, David, I left the denomination I was a part of, and it was a huge deal because of the money, because of the job security, because of all that stuff. You know, you're like,
right.
Oh, this is a big deal. You know? And then you see God's care for you, mm-hmm. and you just see it again and again and again throughout life.
Yes.
And he is so faithful in caring for his people.
That's right.
And we just need to do right by him.
Yeah. When we sold our video business, because we wanted to get out of the video business after we became Christians, and I thought, all right, good. You know, and we've put that aside. And then the money that we got from it, the thing was a scam. The guy was a con artist that had put the whole deal together, and we lost everything. And I thought, wait a minute. I thought I was doing the right thing. You know, and what I didn't realize was going to happen was over the next few years, as we were living from one incident to the other, we saw God delivering for us just in time. And that was priceless. There wasn't anything that we could have gotten from that business.
Yep. Amen. I've seen it time and time again in my life. You read about the saints of old, you know, they've written about God's care for them. And there's a whole new group of people who name his name, mm-hmm. who because of the whole COVID thing have been able to experience that also and see the tender care of the Lord for his people.
That's right.
An awesome thing.
It is.
And there were so many silver linings throughout all of COVID and amongst whatever evil's coming our way ahead. Cause I'll tell you, most people think, you know, we're getting out of this all with, going to the voting box and drinking a latte afterwards. And now the,
or Kool-Aid.
You're living in a fantasy land. If you're theologically driven, you understand innocent blood is no small matter.
That's right.
And, there's judgment upon this nation. It's going to come. And, you know, we saw a delay when we read the scriptures and, King Josiah being there. But two generations later, God brought his judgment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You have to understand these things and people need to understand them. Most important thing we can do at this time is call men to repentance and faith in Christ.
I agree. Yeah, your audio is breaking up a little bit. I'm not sure what's happening with that, but while you take a look at that, I got a comment here from DG8. He says, David, spot on. I trusted that God would provide a way. Doing the right thing must be a priority in our life. Stand up for your freedom. I know cops who did wrong in 2020. And said, I'm just doing my job. Yeah, that's the sad thing that we have seen over and over again. And that's the excuse that you can always say, that you don't have any responsibility. Well, you know, you're going to stand before God one day. You're not going to stand before your supervisor. You're not going to stand before the President of the United States, but you're going to answer to God for what you did. And that's the key yes. thing that we need to all understand, is that we're going to stand before God and we need to, you know, have to give an answer for what we did. Absolutely.
Yeah. Amen.
Let's talk a little bit about another subject that you had out, and that is what is happening with, and I'm still getting a little bit of audio issues there, but talk a little bit about TPUSA and what is Talking Points USA. That's Charlie Kirk's group. And what is going on there? Because I've talked about what's going on with Charlie in the past, and he's still doing the same thing, but he's talking a lot about God. He's doing a lot of God talk, and yet he's doing some things that are very contrary to that I find to be very concerning. I think you do as well.
I do, absolutely. Yeah, and I can hear that noise, too, and I don't know what it is, David. I'm sorry.
That's okay. We're good now. Yeah.
We're good?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. What happened here in Wisconsin, for example, was, back in spring of 23, less than 2 years ago, we had a big Supreme Court race in TP Faith, TP USA, TP Action. They're all the same thing. Came in and they started running around all over our state a man named Scott Presler. Mm-hmm. Scott Presler is an open, unrepentant sodomite. He's one of those guys you don't even have to wonder. I wonder if he's a homosexual because of how he talks.
Yeah, he makes and it clear. Like,
yeah. Yeah, he makes it clear. And he was, led the gays for Trump. And so they're taking him. The Republican Party is allowing this to go on and participating in it with TPUSA and Charlie Kirk, putting an open sodomite on stages across our state. Mm-hmm. Well, I take great umbrage with that. And as a churchman, I preached a sermon called Trojan Horse in the Republican Party, exposing it, mm-hmm. which I had many Republicans try to dissuade me from preaching that sermon, both those sitting on the legislature, those retired from the legislature, politicos and whatnot. But no, our faithfulness needs to be to Christ. Mm-hmm. And we had been helping this guy get elected, and now all of a sudden you have this open homosexual there. No, we're not going to be silent about that. Mm-hmm. So then they didn't learn from that. Instead, what they did is for Trump running this last year, for our state, they gave Scott Presler $5 million. Who gave him $5 million? Oh, that would be Charlie Kirk, TPUSA.
Wow.
And the group there. In order to run him all over our state to help get votes. And so while the latest thing is, and it isn't just Charlie Kirk, it isn't just Scott Presler, there's other homosexuals too.
Yeah, I remember there was something a couple of years ago that he was touring, and he was, at that time, he wasn't talking about Christ, he was talking about culture war. And I remember, yeah. And I've played it several times with several people who challenged him because he had a guy, that was a black guy that was with him, and they were both on stage, and they were saying, how does this help the culture war to have this homosexual with you there, right? And yes. They got very angry and said, well, we got a big tent and all the rest of this kind of stuff, and now he's doing the same thing with Scott Presler. We've seen this at Mar-a-Lago. Mar-a-Lago, mm-hmm. they're welcome. They give awards to Melania. They, the LGBT loves Melania. They've trumpeted the fact that they've got Rick Grenell, who's openly homosexual now, Scott Bessent, who is a Treasury Secretary. And it's not just that, this guy is this is his personal life. We're not going to get involved. No, they're putting that out there as a virtue, as why this person is being chosen. Same as the left does.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so while on one hand, while Trump's talking about how there's only two genders, by the way, I already knew that before he mentioned it.
I know. Yeah.
On the other hand, he's appointing to his cabinet more homosexuals than any other president prior to him. Mm-hmm. That's the duplicity. And Charlie Kirk is involved in the same duplicity during Christmas, just last month, mm-hmm. month and a half ago. December 21st, TPUSA, TP Action, TP Faith did a big thing. I believe it was out in the Phoenix area, Arizona area. Thousands of people. Who did they put up there? And they're all applauding him and all shouting his name over and over again. Scott Presler, the homosexual, the sodomite. Yeah. So, yeah, you look at these things, and Charlie likes to push these videos where he speaks against homosexual marriage or even homosex. But then on the other hand, here he is putting someone who practices that evil in positions of prominence, putting him on a pedestal. Wow. That should bother people.
Yes.
And that should be called to account.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Again, it says one thing when it's being done by a purely political organization. You say, well, these people are working against the values of Christ and they're working against the family and all the rest of this stuff. But when it is somebody who's got this organization that says, we're TP Faith, and he wants to talk about, put himself out there as some kind of an evangelist or apologist for the Christian faith, and he does this type of thing. That takes it to a whole new level.
It does. Yeah. And so that needs to be called to account. I do. And the vitriol you get from so many Christians is stunning, mm-hmm. including churchmen who are hooked up with TPUSA. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm always like, so I would like you guys to expose where all your money comes from, because go try to find out where all their money's coming from. Good luck.
Yeah.
And, you know, because usually when you can ascertain where someone's getting their funding from, you can learn pretty much everything you need to know.
Yes.
And where do they get their money from? Because they have an unlimited supply.
It is amazing. Yeah. $5 million just for him to go around. And we see this again with Awaken America. I've, you know, shown many times, you know, Michael Flynn there at the Department of Defense back in 2014, their second Pride Month, and he's pushing Chris Beck, the guy that was pushed, the Navy SEAL who was pushed into becoming a tranny and now has pushed back against that and said, you know, they did this to me as an adult. Imagine what they're doing to kids that are out there. But, you know, you've got all these people who've now reinvented themselves, and, you know, the Reawaken Tour is just one of those things. He's going around. He's actually, you know, plagiarized and has, he's get these, they go to church buildings and they got all these people there in this quasi-religious political ceremony, and he's got them reciting after him a prayer from Elizabeth Clare Prophet, who is this new age guru, you know, and he's got all these people in a building there. It's a church building, like it's some kind of a Christian event, reciting this prayer to ascended masters. It's insane what's going on.
It is. And that's the thing that bothers me most about it all, David, is they're using Christ and Christianity to fuel it, to pump it, to hoodwink those who name his name.
That's it, hoodwink.
And then there's the churchmen sitting by silent when, you know, we look at the book of Acts with the elders of Ephesus and, you know, Paul making clear to them, you have a duty to guard the flock. You have a duty to speak truth and come against evil. And we don't see that amongst the churchmen. Instead, what I've seen with many churchmen, even some I had respect for, they get hooked onto this whole Charlie Cook wagon train. They get paid massively good amounts of money.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know,
and
I've seen it.
You can't help but think to yourself, is it the money?
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen this with media. You know, people, they're really ultimately hooking themselves to Trump. You know, that's what this is really about. That's what Charlie Kirk has done in a big way. And so you've got a lot of people who are afraid to criticize Trump because they know a lot of people are going to walk out of their church. You know, you got people who do the news and they're afraid to say anything critical about Trump because they know they'll turn you off. And, you know, and they'll turn you off and they'll flip you off. I experienced that personally, you know? So it's, you know, people don't want to look at it in an objective way. It's become really a personality cult. And I think that's what's really dangerous about it. As you pointed out before, you knew there are two genders before Trump decreed it with an executive order. And that's the key. So many people out there are glorifying Trump for this. For putting out that there's, and I said, why didn't we do this from the grassroots? I mean, I never bowed to any of this stuff. I was never ashamed to say anybody, no, you're not a, I haven't had any experiences with that, but I wouldn't be ashamed to say that to anybody. I'm not going to pretend that you're a different sex than you are. I wasn't going to do that. That's a real Orwellian tactic, but it's a tactic to get you to submit to them. But, you know, even going to the pro-life issue, Matt, so many people were singing Trump's praises as he was trashing the pro-life movement, blaming it for midterm election losses that I thought were predominantly the big high-profile people that he got behind were people like Dr. Oz. And it was the people that he put forward and he pushed that were losing, and yet he blamed it on the pro-lifers and said, you know, well, I did all this stuff for them and then they abandoned me. And I've said for the longest time, people need to give God the glory for overturning Roe v. Wade. People prayed about that for decades, and then when it happened, they give the glory to Trump. And he doesn't even want it. He doesn't even want it.
Right. Yeah, and the GOP has been pumping that fiction everywhere across the country, including here in our state, Wisconsin, that, you know, we have to stay away from the abortion issue. It's a losing issue. Mm-hmm. 15 weeks, you know, where 95% of the abortions have already been committed. That's when you can start talking about having laws against it, 15 weeks. And it's such a lie. And, you know, you and I know, David, we've watched this for decades. The GOP and the conservatives, 99% of them can't even defend their position, why they're against the slaughter of the preborn.
Yeah.
That's they've right. so politicized the issue in their minds that it's an incremental regulationist endeavor that they can't bring themselves to realize the fact that, no, you can't even, you cower every time it's brought up rather than, mm-hmm. you know, taking them to task and using it as an opportunity to speak truth yes. and to defend your preborn neighbor.
That's right.
It's about, and this Garrett Boyle, when people listen to his interview too, it's funny because he brings up how he was by the FBI told to look into, pro-life matters. And, he said it was interesting because I'm pretty much an abolitionist, he said, when it comes to abortion, which was interesting to hear, because that's not a term many within the civil realm would want to ascribe to themselves at all. Mm-hmm. Especially following the wisdom of the GOP and what they're trying to peddle at this time for people to accept.
Oh, I agree. But it is slavery because we're talking about personhood. I mentioned this yesterday, I think it was, or Friday. There was a mountain in New Zealand that the pagans there that basically gave personhood to this mountain. And I said, isn't that interesting? You know, they have very, very, liberal abortion laws. Basically, they don't punish people for anything, in New Zealand. So babies don't have personhood, but a mountain does. And it's not the first time they've given, nature, a personhood. They've done it for a river. They've done it for a park or whatever. Now they've done it for a mountain. And so we just don't understand what it means to be in the image of God. And I think yes. that's a key thing that we need to recover with that, and that is the personhood. And you know, we talk about the lost opportunities. I said all through the campaign, I said, you know, you could do it in a positive way. You could. There's a cartoon out there. I don't know if you've seen it or not. It was an animated film where this guy who was an ultrasound technician witnessed an abortion. He was called and he didn't know it was going to be an abortion. And so he talks about what he saw, the baby being ripped apart, and they depict it in a cartoon fashion. And you could go with something like that, but you could also take the positive and show how, with 4D ultrasound, you could show how the babies are human beings. But they don't do yes. any of that stuff. They didn't use the opportunity to show any of that stuff. You could even go for the shock treatment. It could show what the babies look like when they're ripped to pieces and removed from the mother, and they assemble them to make sure they got all the pieces out. That would be allowed and has been done by some candidates who ran for office. They can't stop that. But none of the Republicans would actually show what the murder process is. They wouldn't show the results of it. They wouldn't even go positive and show what life is. They just ran from the issue. And it was yes. amazing to see.
Right. Yeah. Rather than coming out swinging, they cower.
That's right.
And yeah, I've seen it time and time again. And that is a good means too. The one you mentioned about someone running for office at the federal level, they can show the preborn. Both mm-hmm. those developing in the womb and those who've been murdered by the abortionist.
Yeah.
It's something we did back in 2002. We had a number of people in our, group, run for federal office because then you can't be censored. And mm-hmm. they were able to show actual footage of what the preborn looked like after they've been in the hands of the abortionist, which of course there are no pretty pictures of murder.
No.
And so people would see it for the awful thing that it is. Hmm. And it'd have a huge impact on them because most people have been taught abortion is just the removal of some tissue and cells. And it's very, mm-hmm. discreet mm-hmm. and clinical. When they see the actual child butchered, it has a visceral impact upon their minds and their thinking.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I think it's very good to show those photographs. I'm always reminded too of the story out of Judges where the guy's concubine is, mistreated by a pack of sodomites all night long and she ends up dying. And so he ends up cutting her body into pieces and sends them out to the 12 tribes of Israel. So they didn't just see pictures of mm-hmm. the atrocity. Mm-hmm. They had the actual body parts sitting in front of them.
Yeah.
And what was the response of the men of Israel? 400,000 of them rallied with arms yeah. and said, who's responsible for this? Mm-hmm. That's the godly response. What you get from most Christians today, if you show the photographs of the murder of Preborn, is, oh, I'm offended.
Yes.
I'm offended.
How dare you? That. How dare you show that yes. to me? Yeah. It is
it
something
shows you how off course we are.
That's right. Yeah, we know about the spirit of life that is in human beings, even in animals. That's why it doesn't upset you necessarily to see a plant that is broken and laying on the ground, but you see an animal even that has been butchered, that has a visceral effect on people and for justifiable reason. And yet we've turned the other direction. We looked away from this for so long and we told people, don't show us what this is. And that's the key thing. People aren't doing anything. Now you're in Minnesota, is that right? Or
no, Wisconsin. No,
Wisconsin. Oh, okay. I was going to say
Milwaukee.
You're right in the middle. I was thinking for some reason that you're in Minnesota, and it's like you're in Tim Walz land. That's a really tough place. But at least you're not there. That's good. That's good. You're in Wisconsin. Yeah. What is the situation there in terms of after Roe v. Wade has been overturned with Dobbs? What's the situation there with abortion in your state of Wisconsin?
Yeah, abortion, there were no murders here for 14 months.
Mm.
Because we had a law from 1848, I believe it was, criminalizing any abortion. Mm. There was nothing
mm-hmm.
at all. All the death camps closed down. And then, Planned Parenthood decided to, push the envelope. And we're just gonna act like the law doesn't exist. We're going to open up and we're going to start murdering babies. Well, of course, we were out there the first day and the police made it clear that we're going to jail, not them.
Really?
And they said, they even had the police officers tell us there was a meeting with all of us this morning that we're not upholding 940.04. That's our state statute from all the way back in the 1940s. We're not upholding that law. So if any of those pro-lifers try to intervene to protect the preborn in a real tangible sense of blocking the door or something,
mm-hmm.
they go to jail and you protect the abortionist.
Wow.
Think of that, David.
Oh, yeah.
And we didn't have one magistrate anywhere in our state who could do something actually do something. Wow. We had one in Madison area. Because the death camps are here in Milwaukee and in Madison. We had a county official call upon the police chief and the sheriff to arrest the abortionist under 940.04 because he has no power or authority to make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
But at least he wrote to them and admonished them to do their duty and uphold the laws of Wisconsin. So since then, the other death camps have opened up. Once they saw Planned Parenthood was getting away with it. And right now there's a case before our Supreme Court, which still hasn't been decided. It's been going on for well over a year now in order to, gut our, statute 940.04 and through the judiciary, of course, and make it so like there is no law against abortion even on the books. That's where we're at right now. Last year, a year ago, at this very time, I testified at a public hearing brought by the Republicans. They wanted abortion to be outlawed from 14 weeks forward from there.
Hmm.
In other words, 95% of the murders have already taken place. And they were such scoundrels about it, David, that they didn't just do it themselves, because they could have did it in the Assembly and the Senate because they have the majority. They ran it as a bill that would then pass so that the people could vote on it in the state. Like, let's wash our hands of this and throw the preborn to the mob, and have mob rule.
Wow.
Because in a republic, law matters.
Yes.
And including God's law.
That's right.
It's been that way in Western civilization for nearly 2,000 years. And what they're doing is dismantling a republican form of government and creating mob rule, raw democracy, where the mob decides you get to live, you're going to die.
Wow.
Wow. It's wicked.
And they are cowards. I mean, they at the federal level, typically they kick everything over to the bureaucracy. They don't want to do their job.
Yeah.
So at the state level, they kick it over to the mob for a referendum. That's horrible.
Yeah.
And of course, if they don't like the law, they just ignore the law. We got less than a minute, Matt. Tell us again what you got there in terms of people go
sure.
to get the book, The Lesser Magistrate. You got a special thing for them if they go to defytyrants.com. And of course, that
yes.
FBI whistleblower that we talked about earlier. You've got that video there. Anything else you want to tell us about?
Oh, no, that was pretty good. If you do get the book at defytyrants.com, we throw in a CD. I know that's archaic, but I'm old school and I have to have something physical. So it's like,
I like that.
We do send it. We have a CD of a sermon I gave to the Montana legislature. We just throw that in there for free.
Oh, that's cool.
I gave that sermon back in 2015. We're the only state that still does election sermons.
Oh.
And they had me come in and speak on the doctrine of the lesser magistrate. It's a powerful sermon.
Oh, that's
great. It's a blessing to you. It's a good one to give to your churchmen. It's a good one to give to your magistrates in your area. We also give you some stickers and some literature on top of the book also. So,
that's great. And
yeah.
your book does change minds. It absolutely does. And so thank you so much for what you've done. It's an excellent book, folks. It's a fast read. It is packed with information. It's not going to overwhelm you. It's not like War and Peace or anything. It's a small book, and it's all there, and he lays it out in a very concise, rapid way. Thank you so much, Matt, for what you do. And again, defytyrants.com is where you can find the book on The Lesser Magistrate, an important, vital understanding of what this is about. Thank you so much, Matt. Appreciate it. Have a good day.
Thank you. God bless you, David.
Thank you.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project, to make sure the commoners own nothing, and the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.
Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Career changers, including veterans and active duty service members. Your transition starts here. Go from GI to IT in a matter of months. Become a certified cyber warrior with training at My Computer Career. Cybersecurity specialists are in high demand, offering IT pros great opportunities and a rewarding lifestyle while protecting our people, liberty, and treasured institutions from cyber threats. Deploy your career in IT today at mycomputercareer.edu/CWP, an elite CompTIA certification partner.
VA education benefits are available to those who qualify.